Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table. We dance where we're able. We'll routine to call a scene to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam art. We're knights of the round table. Our shows are more mid table. So many times we give and rhyme to our quiet dancing label. We're off the mad in Camelot. We sing from the diaphragm alone.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Sam, sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how do you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma, which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would
hear... Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help, I'm being repressed,
bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
If I were the devil, if I were the prince of darkness, I'd want to engulf the whole world in darkness, and I'd have a third of its real estate and four-fifths of its population, but I wouldn't be happy until I had seized the ripest apple on the tree, the... So I'd set about however necessary to take over the United States. I'd subvert the churches first. I'd begin with a campaign of whispers. With the wisdom of a serpent, I would whisper to you as I whispered to Eve. Do as you please. To the young, I would whisper that the Bible is a myth. I would convince them that man created God instead of the other way around. I would confide that what's bad is good and what's good is square. And the old I would teach to pray after me, our Father, which art in Washington. And then I'd get organized. I'd educate authors in how to make lurid literature exciting so that anything else would appear dull and uninteresting. I'd threaten TV with dirtier movies and vice versa. I'd peddle narcotics to whom I could. I'd sell alcohol to ladies and gentlemen of distinction. I'd tranquilize the rest with pills. If I were the devil, I'd soon have families at war with themselves, churches at war with themselves, and nations at war with themselves until each in its turn was consumed. And with promises of higher ratings, I'd have mesmerizing media fanning the flames. If I were the devil, I would encourage schools to refine young intellects, but neglect to discipline emotions. Just let those run wild. Until before you knew it, you'd have to have drug-sniffing dogs and metal detectors at every schoolhouse door. Within a decade, I'd have prisons overflowing. I'd have judges promoting pornography. Soon I could evict God from the courthouse, then from the schoolhouse, and then from the houses of Congress. And in his own churches, I would substitute psychology for religion and deify science. I would lure priests and pastors into misusing boys and girls and church money. If I were the devil, I'd make the symbol of Easter an egg and the symbol of Christmas a bottle. If I were the devil, I'd take from those who have and give to those who wanted until I had killed the incentive of the ambitious. And what'll you bet? I couldn't get whole states to promote gambling as the way to get rich. I would caution against extremes in hard work, in patriotism, in moral conduct. I would convince the young that marriage is old-fashioned, that swinging is more fun, that what you see on TV is the way to be. And thus I could undress you in public, and I could lure you into bed with diseases for which there is no cure. In other words, if I were the devil, I'd just keep right on doing what he's doing. Paul Harvey.
In constant sorrow all through his days, I am a man of constant sorrow. I've seen trouble all my days. I bid farewell to old Kentucky, the place where I was born and raised, the place where he was born and raised. For 6 long years I've been in trouble. No pleasure here on earth I find. For in this world I'm bound to ramble. I have no friends to help me now. He has no friends to help him now. Never expect to see you again. For I'm bound to ride that northern railroad. Perhaps I'll die upon this train.
Perhaps he'll die upon this train.
Sleeping in my grave
while he is sleeping.
it's the end of time. And the Mississippi River, she's a going dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see. My woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Cause when them old boys raised on shotguns, we say praise and we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. Grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Hello everybody, you're listening to the Knights of the Round Table at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html where you have access to not one but three separate chat rooms. You meet a lot of folks that way. Well, the more the merrier, right, Barbara?
That's right.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, I was
to have you on.
You too. We got Honorable Knight Barbara Three Crow and myself on here today, and You know, I was looking for a specific picture that I had posted in a video quite some time back because this morning when I woke up, I had this deal thinking about, I get up early every Saturday for the Mad Science Show, and I get up every day Sunday for the Knights of the Round Table. And I get up early so that I can research into topics that I'm wanting to talk about each time there's a show. And so that I got some content to bring to you. Well, I had this feeling like, I don't know, I guess you'd call it confusion. In the first sense of that feeling, I remembered a picture that I had put into a video years ago, and it had a really cute little monkey. I think he was like a orangutan and had this little wild looking hairdo, and he had this look on his face like, you know, what the heck's going on? And I just realized I didn't have anything to say. You know, I'm with all the things that are going on out there in this world, and you know, you do shows and you try to, you know, maybe point people in the right direction and, you know, at least try to give out your view of what would be a good advice and try to help the world out. But, you know, there comes a time when things just appear to be so chaotic that you just kind of seem to draw a blank. And when I saw that picture in my head, I mean, it just hit me like a ton of bricks. That's what I'm going to talk about today. I ain't got nothing to say. Absolutely nothing to say. In a world full of chaos, you know, and it's funny because earlier Stephen typed in there and he said, I don't believe that for a minute. And me and Barb was having a conversation off the air and we said pretty much, you know, it'll be a cold day and you'll know where we ain't got nothing to say. there's a lot going on in this world. Am I wrong, Barbara?
Well, no. You're not wrong, and I'll tell you, sometimes there's so much, it's so much that I'm, believe it or not, I feel like I just have to respond by saying, I have no words.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that I don't have something to say. It means I just have no words because I'm just stumped. I'm just blown away by what I see every day. And I just go, I have no word. I mean, I can't find anything inside of me to say in response to what I'm seeing or what people are posting or what. I just go, I have no words. In other words, I can't explain to you why or what this feeling even is that I'm getting as I'm looking at this stuff. So I guess maybe we don't have the language to describe what is happening, because maybe we've never been on this level of insanity and chaos and madness and sick stuff. I don't know. What do you think?
Sure. I couldn't have said it any better myself. I mean, I'm sitting here scrolling down looking at all the different headlines out there in the world, and, you know, where do you start? I mean, long time ago we had a show and we talked about some supposed friends standing around, and the one friend was going to shoot himself in the face with a Roman candle, you know, and YouTube it. And
wow,
I'm like,
real?
Yeah, and he did it too. And he was hollering about how bad it hurt, and I'm like, what do you think was going to happen? And what disturbed me the most was not the fact that the man was that stupid to shoot himself in the face with a Roman candle, but the fact that his friends just stayed around and didn't say or do anything to discourage him. You know, you shouldn't want to do that, you know. No, they stood by and they filmed it for him, you know.
They filmed it.
Yeah.
Well, I think their intention is to make waves on Facebook.
Well, for his 15 minutes of fame, he paid a dear price for that, man. You know, and it seems like when you look out there, especially out here on the internet, I like to call the internet kind of like Pandora's box, because now that it's been opened, there's really no way to close it, and people are just throwing everything out at the anything and everything to the wind and seeing if it sticks, you know. And they're doing all kinds of things to try to either become famous or get attention. And meanwhile, we're sitting here trying to point out to the world, hey, you know, there might be some things that we really seriously need to address, you know, as a
that's right,
mankind. And you got somebody shooting himself in the face with a Roman candle. Come on.
You know, the only thing in response sometimes what I'm doing now is I'm just saying get a life. Because I don't know what else to say. Get a life. Like, come on, people. What's with you? I just was looking at this. It's similar subject here about what people are doing, the crazy stuff that people are doing. And yeah, sometimes I just jaw-dropping, like you guys, you know, being filmed shooting himself in the face with a something, whatever.
Roman
like
candle. Just, that's
Roman
the one that
candle.
Shoots. Yeah, that's the one that shoots them little flaming balls at the end of it. Jeez.
Who brought up that child?
I don't know.
I want to know that. Who brought up that child? But I was looking at this link about this young girl who, I guess she was 18. Now she's 19, but she was 18 and she was arrested for smoking pot or something in a car with some people. And apparently two policemen threw her in the back of their van, and what she says or claims is that they, you know, assaulted her and sexually and blah, blah, blah. And then when she went to the hospital, after that, they released her and she went to the hospital, and she said her lawyer's saying that 9 other policemen came in to threaten her and, you know, work towards, you know, kind of like having her just to shut up, you know, to not say anything. So this is in the news, right?
Yeah.
Now what I'm looking at is that this young woman, 18 years old, is very popular on Facebook. Now, she's got photographs. They've got photographs of this young woman. And this is what puzzles me. It puzzles me, but also I just shake my head. It's like one of those things that just stuns you. So these photographs of this 18-year-old woman, as I've seen a lot of this stuff, she's posing in all kinds of provocative poses, you know, like pouting and with her little butt out and provocative clothing. I mean, she's not naked, but there she is, 18, and on Facebook, posting these kinds of self photographs or selfies, whatever they call them. And I'm thinking, what's wrong with this girl? You know, and I'm not saying that because she's doing that, she's going to get assaulted, but there's something connected here around this, I think.
Well, yeah, it's just mind blowing to me, you know, some of the things that people will post on there. I mean, for example, you know, you got people out there that, I've watched a few wars between a few different families out there on YouTube, and they're just calling each other names and, you know, just really bad stuff. And they'll put things out there, right there for the whole world, the whole entire world to see. I mean, back when I was younger, there was this thing about airing your dirty laundry out to the public. You know, you just kind of keep your family affairs to yourself and try to resolve them, you know, and it's not something you want the whole world to know about. But today, it don't seem like it's anywhere close to that. I mean, they don't care. They just cuss each other out and give each other the finger and pictures, you know. And I'm thinking, the morality, if I could take this internet back in time and show my grandfather, my grandmother, oh man, they would just be blown away.
I agree with you there, and it's sort of like, what is that? I mean, do you have any thoughts on that, about like, what are people thinking? There's that one of that, I have no words. What are people thinking that they think that, or do they think, but that this Facebook or internet gives them the free, you know, the free ability or whatever, to do whatever they want, to post whatever they want, to air their dirty laundry like you're talking about? Like, what has happened? right?
I don't know, but like I said, there, you know, my grandmother, I can hear my grandmother now. She would swear up and down that the biblical revelations was come to pass if she saw what was going on today. I mean, if you listen to what Paul Harvey said back in 1965, and you match to, I know you know what it was like back then. We both do.
Yes, I do.
And it just seemed like when you're walking through society back then, people just seemed to be a lot more respectful than you know, they are today. People would open doors for ladies and each other and, you know, yes sir, yes ma'am, and stuff like that. And nowadays,
well, men would tip their hats to ladies and
yeah,
blah blah blah. But you know what? That brings to mind here. Why do you think? What's with this piece? I'm just going to focus on this for a second, Chaziz, because what you just brought up reminds me of the anger. How angry certain women are that a man would open the door for her, because the woman in these times believes that he's indicating that she's weak, can't open the door herself, and he's the man, and he's the masculine, and he's taking charge. Now, this is what this seems to me.
Yeah, I was just thinking that right before you said that. Right before you said that, I was just thinking that same doggone thing. Nowadays, you're liable to get yourself in trouble opening the door for women, but nonetheless, I'll do it anyway. Because,
well,
I was taught that that was like an honorable thing, you know.
It's right now, but it is a conundrum, and I think it's gone too far. You know, I think this whole thing has gone way out of kilter. This whole situation—the masculine, the feminine, the whole thing about the feminists—and some guy was talking recently on Facebook about the feministas or the feminazis. And in some ways, he's right, you know, but that's not across the board. But it is an issue, it is a problem. And how do we function with each other? How can we live together as men and women if we have these kinds of attitudes, you know? And there is a degree that's out of range and over the top on both sides, I think.
Yeah, I think it can be taken too far.
You know, for me, when a man opens a door for me, I say thank you and give him a big smile. And when a man might be behind me or coming at the door, I hold the door for him.
See, you that's know? Nice too. I've had that happen to me. Some ladies hold the door for me. I think it's just people helping people. But you know, a lot of folks that were raised up like you and I were raised up, we got a little bit more respect for our elders and women and stuff like that. You know, it's one of the things that used to drive me insane. I would hear some younger men these days talking about, you know, fighting with women and stuff like that, and they're saying words like, well, you know, if a woman puts herself in a man's place, I ain't got no problem knocking her out, you know. And I'm like, what? If you can walk away from the situation, that would probably be the wise choice, I would venture to say. But I wasn't raised like that.
I think that, like I said, everything's gotten a little out of balance, maybe way out of balance, not just a little, because women have been fighting for their rights ever since they came to this Turtle Island, you know that.
Yeah.
And so, and even still today, we know that women are underpaid, and there's attitude toward women from men, and that's part of society, I believe, as an imprint that was done deliberately. I don't know, that's just my theory. But so women are angry about this. Women have been angry. You know, they were jailed for wanting a vote. They were force-fed for wanting a vote. Yeah. Stuff like that.
They were right. You know? They were right to be angry. And as far as women being able to be capable as men, I know that women are. I watched my mom do a man's job for years, you know, to take care of a family. So, you know, I know the heart, and, you know, I don't think she was always paid exactly to what the men would have got out of the deal. And the person that she was working for came from a time where they didn't respect women as much as they should have back then.
Well, they still don't. I mean, there's like this whole wave of coming out now. It's nothing new. You know, I said this assault upon women in really bad ways is nothing new. It's just that it's coming out. The curtain's been lifted, you know. And I'm on the fence about a lot of this because I feel that women have lost respect for themselves. I'm not saying every woman. I'm just saying women have put themselves in a position where they are, and I suppose part of it is due to the anger and the resentment and the feeling that they deserve just as much pay and so on and so forth and respect that men get, and men have this seemingly this dominator power controlling aspect of themselves. I feel that that was a systematic imprint that they received, and I think it's wrong. I think that women are struggling to find a balance, but they're way out of balance, and they're angry and resentful, and this is creating a lot of mess with the way they present themselves. You know, I'm going to just say, I feel like an imprint in our society about girls and boys is very damaging. So you have, before your baby's even born, if you know, now you know what the baby's going to be, right?
Yep.
So you're all set. You know there's going to be a girl. So everybody goes out and gets everything that represents a girl in society's eyes, or represents a boy in society's eyes. So there's trucks coming as gifts and little machinery stuff for boys in blue and all this stuff. And for girls, it's whatever is pink and sparkly and dolls. And so you have all this whole setup, and your grandmother or your grandfather or your relatives are saying, well, I want my grandchild, or I want my son to be a doctor, or I want my daughter to be whatever it is. And then you haven't lost this piece, I think, about that women are homemakers. They should be homemakers. And this person posting on this Facebook was saying that women have been taken out of that position that they absolutely actually loved, was to make a house a home.
Yeah.
And I said, that's not true. How can you go across the board and say that all women, that was their goal in life? I said, that's the problem, that kind of thinking, right?
Yeah, my mom had to be the mom and the dad. One of the things that was most profound about what my mom's taught me throughout my life was that she used to say all the time that you teach people how to treat you. And when I was younger, it really didn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And maybe that's something that, you know, both men and women need to recognize, that, you know, you do teach people how to treat you. If you dress provocative, people, especially in today's society, you know, it's kind of like the guy with tattoos as opposed to the guy without tattoos. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, there's the first impressions, and that's what
yeah.
we go by.
And that's
your grandma was right. She was absolutely right.
That's another reason why I think that this whole Facebook thing is going to come back on some folks, you know, like years down the line when, you know, let's say you're 20-some-odd years old, you're out there foul-mouthing and raising a ruckus on Facebook or YouTube, and then suddenly you decide to change your ways and, you know, maybe find yourself some sort of church community to go to, or even a new job that's a prospective job that you want. And then by some weird coincidence, somebody stumbles on to, you know, all of what you used to be, and they pretty much look at you like, you know, he did that back then. Why? What makes me think he's going to, he or she's going to be any different today? You see what I'm saying?
I do, you know, and I also think about what you just said about, you know, well, if we respect ourselves, and looking at the way some of the women are dressing today, and that's an issue that I have. It's because, okay, I'm not saying, and this is politically incorrect, by the way, if you say, well, the way she's dressed, she deserved it, you know, and it's not that I'm saying that, but I am saying that where's your own responsibility? Where is your reasoning? You know, your common sense, you know?
Yeah, I don't believe that anybody deserves anything like that, even if they dressed in the most, you know, provocative ways. What I do believe is that if there's any kind of possibility that you could give somebody the wrong impression, then maybe you should, you know, think about that and, you know, try to, you know, downgrade it a little bit, so to speak, you know. wear something just slightly less, just not to change who you are or anything like that, but to not send out signals to people that might give them a different impression of what you know, like you just said, the first impressions are really important. And
well, but you know, the other thing though, Chaz, is let's be realistic now. There are women who could be fully clothed with all covered up, whatever, and they could still be assaulted.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that 100%. You know, another thing is, to me, it doesn't justify, it don't matter how somebody's dressed, it doesn't justify somebody else's actions towards somebody. If somebody makes that kind of decision to harm anybody, you know, flat out, it's wrong straight across the board. There ain't no excuses for it. You know, I used to tell my kids all the time, because they'd get in a fight and they'd, you know, hit each other or whatever. And instead of coming to Dad first and, you know, trying to rectify the situation, you know, Dad come in here and with stern voice say, you know, you need to knock it off or you're going to, you know, be grounded or whatever, you know, whatever it takes. But I told him, I said, the moment you raised your hand to another person, you made a conscious choice to do something. And so you pretty much got your, you pretty much already got your revenge on your brother or your sister. And so that's as far as it's going. You chose, instead of, you know, going to Dad, you chose to hit each other. You see where I'm going with that?
I do.
And
I do.
They didn't like it when I said that, but, you know, I'm the only one who can control me. You know, whatever somebody does to me, whatever I do in response to that, that was my choice. Nobody else raised my hand to do that or whatever, you know. Nobody put the words in my mouth and made me say what I said. And so I'm responsible for my own decisions in life. And on both sides of the fence, I guess, you know, what I'm trying to get to is that, you know, no matter what, you know, whether male or female, you make some conscious choices to act a certain way, or, you know, it's like me, I don't like people cursing on the radio, all right? And I really try not to do it in my own personal life, but I'm only human, and sometimes I stub my toe or hit my thumb with a hammer, you know, and, you know, I was the same.
Oh, yeah,
it
takes a lot for me to use some expletive. It really does, because I'm the same way about that.
But I'm not trying.
But I feel.
I'm not trying to be a hypocrite to anybody out there, but I just kind of want to be respectful to everybody that could potentially be listening. And I want to be respectful to myself, and I want to be real to the world. This is the life path that I'm trying to lead. I'm trying to lead a life path that is, you know, decent and respectful. And there's that saying, you know, talking the talk and walking the walk. It's not easy to do that sometimes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because, you know, I also feel that society has a lot to do with this. I'm not a prude. I know you're not a prude either. And I'm not above anybody else. I'm not placing myself above anyone else because when I say don't curse in front of me, what that is for me personally, and I can only speak for myself in this moment, is what it is about words. Words have power. Words have a different frequency, a different energy, right?
Yeah.
And when you throw out some heavy-duty curse words, that's a powerful energy. And for me personally, it just like a hits me like a boom right in my gut. Because it's a different frequency that I don't want to align myself with. It's out of skew. It's out of balance. It's disharmonious. It's a level of sort of like an energetic assault. That's how I experience it.
Yeah. And, you know, it's kind of like when we were talking about how powerful words are, you could sit there and literally tell somebody so long and so harshly that they're stupid that at some point they might actually start to believe it, you know?
Well, I could vouch for that. I grew up in a household. I had a learning disability, you know. Now I'm 70, going to be 76 next month. So I grew up a long time ago. There was no knowledge of learning disabilities then. You know, so I had a learning disability, And my dad, in his great frustration, because he was a very, very smart man, would be screaming at me, you know, trying to get me to see something during homework time. And he would just lose it. And he would just scream at me that I was stupid. You know, you're stupid. I mean, really, quite heavily. Heavy, heavy, heavy stuff on me.
Oh,
you know?
Man. And to hear that coming from your father, that would be terrible.
That was pretty intense.
Yeah.
And so I grew up that way, Shaz is, and what happened to me, yes, I began to believe that I must be stupid. I really started to believe that because my dad told me that. And his frustration and my inability to learn something specific brought me to believe that I'm just stupid. I accepted myself as that. I actually used to say, well, I don't understand this, but it's because I'm stupid. Now, I know I'm not stupid. It took me many years to come to that. As a matter of fact, I say I'm quite brilliant.
Yeah.
But I still, in this particular area, and I will say it's with math, it's figures, stuff like that, I just didn't get it. I still don't get it, but it doesn't mean anything right now for me in my life. But when you're in school, it means everything, of course. But you will believe what you are told over and over and over again. That's so damaging.
Yep, and that's one of the things that I'd like to trying to lead to also is the way that society has put into the minds of the youth these are certain things that are acceptable now, or these are certain things that you got to dress like, and these are the brands you got to wear to be cool and all that kind of stuff. And I'm honestly believing that the majority of the youth from the time that they went to school and interacted with all their fellow classmates and even life in general and the media and TV and entertainment industry all together, that they were literally being abused all them years. And maybe not even realizing that they were being abused by society. And to me, that's a shame.
I totally agree with you there. And I just want to segue right back into what we were talking about earlier about what society tells us that we need to strive to be in order to be acceptable.
Yep.
And that's like, okay, if you are a woman or a girl, let's say a girl, you're starting out as a girl, and you look everywhere, look in the supermarket at the magazines, the tabloids, everything is about sexuality. It's about provocativeness, how to dress, how these movie stars dress, what's sold in the stores, what you must, buy to be, acceptable, loved, looking good, or become a star, whatever you want to call it. And it's the same for men and women, boys and girls. So I'm just saying that society has a lot to do with where we are today.
Yeah.
The rules and regulations set up, I just call it the agenda. It's the agenda to really do a lot of harm,
Well, like I said, my mom said, you teach people how to treat you. Well, society teaches people how to treat each other, and it's not always for the good.
So this is the confusion around what's happening, I think, today, and why you see in these tabloids, why you saw that 18-year-old girl who was assaulted by the police, she's claiming that, and there she is on Facebook in these provocative positions, positioning herself like that, in scanty clothes, because she believes that that's going to make her popular and a star. And then you have the stars, the Hollywood stars. These people are just people. They're just people like you and I.
Yeah, just trying to find their way. They're trying to find themselves,
But they're nobody super special.
No.
But people glom onto them like, I got to live my life like so-and-so. I got to twerk and I got to wear these skimpy clothes, and that's going to make me popular. That's the societal imprint that is confusing people, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, and I think that's why when you look out there and you see what's going on out there, it's overwhelming. There's a deal, it's a thumbnail on one of these stories out there I think Richie from Boston did this particular one, and it's got like a half naked lady with a word censored over the top, and it says, "How dumb are you? Well, the elites are finding out." And what he's talking about is essentially what's going on Facebook, that, you know, you're posting things on Facebook for the world pretty much your entire life, and so if anybody ever wants to do like any really real research on you, they can just follow your breadcrumbs that you threw out there for the whole world to see. You know, I'm not against sharing your story with the world. That's a good thing, but you got to think that at sometime down the line, is that what you want people to think of you? You see what I mean?
Yeah, it's like, where's the common sense?
Yeah. You know,
there is no common sense. And it seems like morals are down the toilet, and all this, people are attacking each other like I've never seen before.
I'm thinking we should...
If you write something, just let me say this, if you write something in an email or on Facebook, people reading it will misconstrue it, right?
Yeah.
They'll think you're saying one thing when you are not, when you're meaning something entirely different, and they'll go off like a crazy person at you.
Yeah.
Because nobody communicates verbally anymore. That's all Facebook.
I'm thinking at this point in the game, we should be surprised, but we're not. We've seen so much of this in the time that you and I and everybody else who's been on these radio shows have seen and talked about all kinds of different events in life. We should be surprised at the way that people are, but we're not, because we've seen so much chaos since we started this stuff.
Well, do you know, I love that word, chaos, because, and I've talked about it here before, talked about it with you, I've been talking about it on the radio for over a year now, about chaos, because years ago, I was given a prophecy by spirit and was told that in the coming times chaos would be rising. And it has, and we will be seeing people's behavior that will shock us and stun us, and we've seen that too.
Yes, we have. You know, look, I said this, this really blew my doors off one day. You know, I've got nothing against people with their, if they want to have a lifestyle like the drag queen thing, if that's what they want to choose to do, that's one thing. But they actually kind of glorified Drag Queen Day at a library. With little kids. Couldn't have been more than anywhere from 6 years and up, you know, involved in this situation. And some of the actions that these adults were doing around these children, and then they actually had one child who was like around 10 years old who was dressed up like that as well and acting out these things too. And I was mortified.
Imitating the one that was, you know, I saw that video, and Patty and I had talked about that. I think it's old video, actually. Months ago, we talked about that because there were several incidences along those lines. There was a big event at some school in an auditorium. The whole auditorium was filled with families and people, and there was a drag queen on stage. And then there was that one that you're talking about in the library.
Yeah.
And I watched it again the other day, and I'm just appalled by it, and everybody clapping and screaming. Now, parents were there.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. I was mortified because looking in the background, the parents were like, oh, you know, this is just a normal thing.
Well, you know, you and I are just old-fashioned.
Yeah, I guess.
We don't fit in the society today, and you're politically incorrect, and so am I.
Yeah.
But, you know, I have to say that I noticed the little girl after she got done with her performance and how she was offered, I don't know, flowers or something, a plaque by another person who was also dressed as so, whatever. And he said to her, "That was so beautiful. You are so powerful. Just be you." Okay? And this is the whole wave. Just be you. But we're going to kind of like push you along in this particular area.
Yeah.
and to
I,
be.
That I think that right in there is the trap. The just be you thing is the trap, because it sounds on the surface it sounds wonderful to be able to just be you, but
that's correct.
It's not. Look, these 10 years old. You're still not old enough to make wise choices. It's going to affect you down the line. And children should be allowed to grow up naturally to decide for themselves where they want to go with their life, how they want to act in life. And for anybody to put any kind of influence on them like that at that young of age, as far as I'm concerned, I believe I actually typed it in the comment section on that video. I felt like it was child abuse. That's all there is to it. I mean,
well, I have to say, though, I'm going to go back to this original conversation we had, is that we all start out that way.
Yeah.
Society has already set it up to implement this. If you're a girl, this is what you do. If you're a boy, this is what you do. This is how you dress. This is what you aspire to be. So it's already happening to me. That is abuse as well. And I agree with you that every child is a free spirit, and they need to be, you know, unfolding and blooming and blossoming to what they feel inside themselves. You know, if you are a girl and you want to become a scientist, you know, that's great. But that's not allowed so much.
No.
You know? And so, but here we have this conundrum today about this sexualizing of children. Pedophilia, you know, the trans this and trans that, and as you said earlier, I'm not against anybody, what they want to do behind their closed doors, whatever they are, if they're not harming anyone, I'm not judging anybody. I am so not judging anybody. What I'm seeing, though, is something going on here that is quite concerning to me, and it is about little children being introduced in school to you know, sex aids, and different types of sexuality and different positions. And this is an education now. You know, this is sexual education that the schools, the education system has taken over from parents. I'm not saying that parents are on top of this either, but something has to shift, because something's going on that's very concerning. And there was a post the other day of this psychotherapist who said, and I didn't read the article, I just shook my head and said I have no words, but the title was that children as early as the age of 2 know their sexual orientation.
Man, I'm just blown away by the whole scene, but I think what really disturbs me the most when I see all these different things unfolding before our very eyes is the fact that there are parents in the background that are just sitting there idly by, and as if, you know, hey, everything's fine. Oh, well, they're going to learn that sooner or later. Well, preferably later, because that child's got an education to try to get, you know, learn about life and, you know, science or whatever, and find their way through. You know, kids already struggle to get through life. I mean, it's already the game is stacked against them, if you understand what I'm saying, because the way that society has portrayed it, you know, you have to be skinny and you have to look like this and you have to dress these clothes in order to be popular, and you feel bad for the little kids that maybe come from a poorer family who, instead of getting the Nikes or Pumas or Adidas, they end up with a little Walmart version of a cheapo shoe or something like that. And I felt that when I was a kid. I honestly lived that deal where I go through school and, you know that old saying, you're ugly and your mama dresses you funny kind of thing?
Yeah.
Well, that came from other kids in school. I actually heard that, and, you know, we were poor, and if my pants were a little bit higher than they should have been and my shoes weren't as fancy as them, I walked through the hallways, you know, feeling ashamed when I shouldn't have had to feel ashamed for being, you know, just being me. I wasn't wealthy, so I couldn't afford all these nice things that everybody had. I mean, my clothes weren't, they weren't bad clothes. I mean, they were, you know, the best that mom had to do with.
They were clean.
Yeah, and they were clean, but they just didn't fit
the standard.
Yeah. And so,
well,
I know what that feels like.
Yeah, I feel like I grew up poor too, and I had girlfriends that had more clothes than you know, like a store.
Yeah.
And I was poor, you know, and I had secondhand clothes, you know. But where does that come from? That's learned behavior, I think. I don't think we are born with that type of prejudice.
I agree. You know, I can remember the first time that I got a really nice pair of shoes, and I felt so different walking down the hallway, you know? I mean, like, it's like, I got these really nice shoes on. Maybe this will make them look at me differently, you know? And it's just...
Well, they'll find something else.
Yeah. It never was... Nothing ever was good enough. And once a poor child gets in that doggone deal where certain kids look at him differently and they find their little nicknames or whatever for them, and it's just so hard for a kid to go to school to try to be educated when he's got to worry about bullies or, you know, other kids' ridicule, you know, or, you know, self-conscious about the way that they're dressed. And to some extent, and I know it's kind of... kind of ironic, but to some extent I can understand some of what some of these social justice warriors out there are wanting for people, to make everybody be, you know, have some sense of fairness. But it's not realistic, and a lot of the ways that they go about them are really disturbing. And you know, it's like you can't just say, okay, the world's a free-for-all, do what you want, like kind of like Aleister Crowley's term, do as thou wilt or whatever, you know. That, I don't know, man. If you just picture a world that's just every man for himself.
And like a free-for-all.
Yeah.
Right? It feels like that's where we're heading. I don't know.
Well, I think
no
you're
morals,
right.
No morals, no guidelines, no boundaries.
I think you're right.
I was looking at this family. I don't know where they. It doesn't matter where they were, but they have a little person, a little child, and they decided to dress. I guess it's a little boy. They decided to dress their little boy occasionally in girls' clothes, boys' clothes, and girls' clothes, just in case he is a. Whatever, I don't even know how to explain it, more, let's say, inclined toward to be female. So these parents feel that they're helping their child, supporting their child, their boy, just in case he may at some point wake up and say, well, I'm really not a boy, I'm a girl, so they're supporting him.
Yeah. Well,
there's one of those I have no words.
Imagine, yeah. Imagine yourself as that child and being... Now, if there was any confusion to be had, now it's that.
There's a lot of confusion.
Yeah. I mean, and not to mention, if you're that child and you end up going to school kind of dressed like that, or even out in public for that matter, and people, your peers from school see you like that, you just got a reputation. And once you get a reputation for just about anything in this world, it sticks.
Look, I'm not saying that if a boy or a girl chooses something that society would say is not of their gender, that we should freak out.
Well, I don't think we should freak out either, but I don't think we should try to interfere with their natural progression.
That's right.
Yeah.
So it's like if a little boy is drawn to shiny beads or sparkly things, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, there is nothing wrong with that. If it's the parents' responses that could be confusing.
Yep. You know, it's funny because to this very day, I'm kind of apprehensive to help carry my wife's purse into the house. And that's because when I was younger...
The neighbors are watching.
Yeah. When I was younger, I had a lot of uncles, and... first off, I was always raised that a woman's purse is sacred. You know, that's where she keeps her makeups or whatever, her personal things, and you just don't get into a woman's purse without, you know, her permission or anything like that, you know. But my uncles, now they were what you, I guess you'd call manly men, all right? And so every time they would see, Mom would say, yeah, go out there to my truck and get my purse and bring it in to me. And I say, oh, I don't know if I really want to do that.
And they all look at each other, yeah, go, you go.
Yeah, Mom's just saying, you go get it. And so I go out there. I'm not going to disobey my mom. I go out there, I get my mom's purse, and I'm carrying it back to the house, and I just have to make that terrible journey right past all my uncles.
A thousand steps.
Yeah. Oh, you look at you. You're so cute with your little purse and all this, you know, and I'm like, oh, my God.
Well, the neighbors, today the neighbors are watching, and they'll put you on Facebook.
Yeah, they would, too. And my uncles would see it, and they, to this very day, would, oh, man, they wouldn't lose that chance. No.
Well, they've got to say they'll take you to the woodshed and teach you some
yep.
things.
But that's the kind of world we was raised up in, you know. And sometimes, unfortunately, you know, people, not just kids alone, but people can be so cruel to one another. And
oh,
that,
my gosh.
That just
yes.
blows my doors off, because I'm sitting here trying to talk about how to make the world a better place, and it's kind of like herding chickens, if you understand what I'm trying to point out there. You get
yeah.
a couple of them rounded over here, and you're having a conversation with them, and there's a ruckus going on over there, a bunch of them being running over there, and you're like, hey, you know, we got this thing coming down the road, we all gotta try to get together and resolve, you know, things getting rough, and, you know, meanwhile, everything's just going in all different directions. And so,
yeah,
I feel,
so what is that? What do you feel when you say something's coming down the road? Because I'm right there with you. But, you know, that's a good discussion to segue into right now.
Yeah. Well, what I feel like is coming down the road is kind of like, you know, when you're out there driving your car, you're always on the lookout for any potential hazard that could come about, you know. And so you proceed into the your future path, whatever, with caution. And you're paying attention and usually make it from point A to point B, you know, safely. Well, as I'm looking down the future of humanity, I'm seeing things that the way that society's acting towards each other. And you know, you hear stories like, let's just take George Soros, for instance. He has been known to go out and spend millions of dollars to destabilize countries. And so even when I'm hearing how corrupt that our government may or may not be, I'm proceeding with caution, because I don't know that it might be somebody behind the scenes like George Soros that is literally trying to destabilize our nation by throwing that seed of doubt that we can't trust our government, we can't trust each other, we can't trust nothing in the world, and making us continuously apprehensive and paranoid. You see what I'm saying? And
I do, yeah.
When people start to react to it, you can actually see these reactions play out. You know, like you'll get two different sections, one that is, you know, anti-government, one that is government, and they're all sitting there arguing back and forth and talking, oh, you're just a conspiracy nut and blah, blah, blah. Well, what if that is part of the game? All right?
I think it is.
Yeah.
I do. When you're talking here, what's coming to my mind right now is that, you know, that is part of the game.
Yeah. What
is to, that's, to me, that's one of the big potholes in the road.
What if it's to get us all fighting and then finally get so mad by whatever situation arises that we literally come against our government and our own military comes against each other and we're in the middle of a civil war? You know, and that's just one nation. It's happened to many nations. And somebody's behind the scenes pushing the buttons. I liken it to like the Jerry Springer show, where he gets a couple people that disagree on any given subject, and he kind of agitates each side, and, you know, it's for the show. You go out there and, you know, do whatever. And he literally has people fighting on stage where, they, you know, they got the security's going to come in there and break them up and all that. But, you know, it's all part of the show. And then
it's a show. Yeah. It's just a show to bring in, you know, more observers and Jerry Springer's show. And I never watched that show. It's very kind of distasteful stuff to me, and that was one of those jaw-dropping, I happened to come across one of the, I don't know, videos, and I was like, what the heck is this, you know? And I saw these people screaming at each other on a stage.
In front of the world.
Getting up and hitting each other.
Yeah, in front of the whole world.
And then people in the audience people in the audience standing up and screaming, and I thought, what on earth is this craziness? This is all for the whole world to see. And to me, yeah, I agree. I think there is a manipulation to get people pitted against each other and get fighting in the streets and, you know, all that fear and anger. And there is something behind this, Shaziz. And I think that's a huge off-the-cliff place on the road of our life's journey. That's coming in the future if we don't, if we don't come to our senses.
The scary thing is not necessarily the act that's playing out on the stage, but it's the reaction of the people that's in the audience. Jerry, you know, and they're like, you know, show us more. It's like some old sort of Roman Colosseum where the people are out there doing battle with swords and one of them's going to die, and they don't have no concept that this means that somebody's going to die.
Well, no, they don't have a concept. I mean, to me, that's right across the board with what we're looking at today. Even with, I don't know if you probably do remember, but just to think what's come into my mind is the Vietnam War. When people sat down to dinner every night and on the TV was a war.
Yep, I remember those days.
Live view of the war, of people dying, of terrible things going on in another part of this world that we had no business being there, in my estimation.
Well, I agree.
And now we kind of know, you know, that we shouldn't have been there, that all these wars are, you know, set in place for reasons that have nothing to do with the safety of our country, I think. But looking at that and seeing, okay, so people are having dinner, watching young boys being put in body bags and carried off in helicopters, and terrible things that they're showing, and people are just got used to it, like this, like a show, like it's just like a Jerry Springer show or just a bad movie, you know, like a war movie. War movies glorify war, but they're not glory. They're really not.
No.
And so then they didn't do that with the Iran or with Afghanistan. No, none of that. They pick and choose what they want to show the public. And they don't send any body bags home on TV, on the nightly news. Very rarely do you ever see that. And there's a reason for that. You know?
Yep. And you know, one of the side effects that is most overlooked about all these conflicts and wars that have gone on throughout the years is to this very day, you will see people look at Vietnamese differently than they would have otherwise, you know, if you just knew somebody for themselves. It happens to not just the Vietnamese, but it happens to Americans when they're out there in another country. Look at America, the Americans, as if, you know, they're all terrible people. And this basically, as far as I'm concerned, it permeates all cultures out there, between the Japanese and you know, the Americans and the Chinese and Americans and everybody out there who's ever been involved in a conflict with somebody else, you look at them differently, just like what's going on in the Middle East. You know, when you see somebody dressed as like a Muslim, it's the first thing that comes to your mind, you know, was the whole story that's been, you know, basically propagandized to everybody about the terrorists. When I see somebody from the Middle East, the very first thing that comes to my mind, even though that's not what I believe, is terrorist. You know? What are they going to do to hurt me or something like that? I got to catch myself. You know? You know my heart, Barbara.
I know what you mean. I know exactly what you mean, because there's that whole... It's across the board, Shaziz, this whole... This is an imprint, a deliberate imprint, and I have to keep saying that, because... When some people, for instance, see a black person, what immediately comes into their mind, everything that, you know, the system has put in our mind about black people.
Yeah.
Same thing with an overweight person. Same thing, you know, with somebody who looks a little strange or dresses like you're talking about in school. You dress because you didn't have, you know, your family didn't have a lot of money. But so there it is. It's all across the board. There is a systematic, I feel, imprint to pit us against each other, where we can't live in harmony and peace.
Yeah, and from where I stand, and tell me if you think I'm wrong, is I don't believe it's a natural prejudice. I don't believe it's a natural, you know, hatred or not hatred. That's too harsh of a word, because I got no hate in my heart for anybody, regardless of what they look like. It's just that it's not natural for me to look at somebody who's from a foreign country, and the very first thing, you know, when I see a Japanese individual, very first thing I think about is Pearl Harbor or World War II or whatever like that, you know. And I had an experience years and years ago when I was in the Navy. I was out at night, and I was just wandering around, just checking out Japan, and I come across this old man sitting down there by this machine, and I sat down and I said hello to him, and he spoke a little bit of broken English, and so we could understand each other. And he got up and he bought a couple of these little glasses of sake, rice wine, out of the deal, and he sat down and he handed one to me and kind of bowed a little bit to me, and I kind of felt strange, because I didn't feel myself to be any better or worse than him. I felt like we were on the same level playing field. And he sat down and he started talking to me, and we were sharing the sake together, and he was telling me how sorry he was for the war. And I really didn't know what to say. I had nothing to say, because I wasn't even alive during that time. All right, but because he had been alive during that time, and he had seen and done things that he probably wouldn't have done had it not been for the war, he felt the need to apologize to me because I was an American. And I'm sitting there and I'm trying to tell him, you know, I'm sorry too. I said, I wish that would have never happened, because from what I see, I've been over here for a short period of time, and your people have made me feel like this is my home too. And him and I cried together. This was a man that I never met before in my entire life, an older gentleman that shared a story with me and was trying to make an attempt to apologize to me for something that, you know, he didn't do nothing to me. You see what I'm saying?
Well, I do, and to me that's such a beautiful healing that you experienced there. That man had a healing, you know, to be able to say that what he probably was holding all those many, many years and had nobody to share that pain and regret or whatever it is, you know?
Yeah. And to me, it was a special moment. And, I'll carry that around with me forever, because I remember that as if it was yesterday. And if it taught me anything at all, there's no place in this world for war. You know, outside of the, you know, having to defend yourself, which is a shame that you would have to defend yourself in a world that should be so wonderful. There's no place in war. War tears apart families. It tears lives up. It leaves so much damage to so many different people in this world. You know, you take the people that had been over in Iraq, you know, and were doing things that they, you know, otherwise, like I said before, wouldn't do, you know?
Well, the same thing with our soldiers.
Yeah.
You know, our men, our young men and women, and the stories of what some of them did in Vietnam and probably other wars that we don't know about.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just saying, it would be a beautiful thing if we could all sit down together and just talk, like you had that sake with that little Japanese fellow, and just sit down and talk. We're all really the same. I don't think anybody, even a mother, wants to send her child to war.
No.
That's for sure. And I think the society, the way it's been set up, again, it's like there are those who do want war, who need war, and they're the corporations, and they're the whomever that follow the money, you know?
Yeah, war is profitable. They said that. That came out of their own mouth. That was their words. War is profitable. You know, I don't know if you ever seen that, there's a movie with Nicolas Cage in there. I can't remember, something about Lords of War or something like that. And this man was making millions of dollars selling weapons to both sides.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
That's based on fact, actually. But this is what we're dealing with, you see, and this is, like you said, I can see what's coming down the road, and I want to warn people, you know, we go on the roadway in a car, and we're looking and observing and being alert to what may come that could, you know, do harm. And this is what we're telling the people, you know, this is what we do. Like, you know, you, me, Patty, we always say, well, like, the show is here, I have nothing to say, right? Or
yeah.
Whatever. Yeah. We can't help ourselves. I feel that's what we were put here on the earth for, but we're not the only ones, you know, because we love this Mother Earth so much and because we love humanity so much. And, you know, when I see people on the street, like a different nationality or, you know, someone on that is different than myself on outwardly, I want to know that person. I'm very curious.
Yeah, me too.
I'd like to get to know that person. I want to know about them, their life. It's something innate within me, you know. So I look at people, and I give them a smile, you know. And years ago, I used to travel to Mexico a lot. I'm talking, you know, 25-some years ago. I used to travel to Mexico a lot. And every day on the street in these little towns in Mexico, you'd be walking down the street and everybody would say, buenos dias, good morning, good morning. They don't even know you. When I came back to the States, I was in that same mode, energy-like, looking at people, walking down the street, and nobody was looking at me, and nobody was saying, hello, good morning.
Yeah.
Huge difference.
When I was over in Japan, it was a whole complete different culture than what I was. To me it was fascinating. It was probably one of the most memorable times of my life, and I actually got to meet you know, Japanese people and learned a little bit about their culture, and they didn't treat me like I was a stranger. They treated me like I was family, you know. They were always kind. I never had any bad experiences with any of the local people over there. And so when I come back from Japan, I come back with a whole different profound outlook on Japanese people. That when I was raised up and you would watch TV and they'd have a, you know, the Japanese people in the world, the war or whatever, and they always wanted to kill Americans and, you know, torture them and all this kind of stuff. And this is the only view that I got of them until I was a certain age, when I actually got to physically go visit with these people. And you mentioned earlier about the black culture. It was the same thing. I was told so many things when I was coming up, you know, you can't trust these people, you know, they'll steal from you and all that kind of stuff. And all the time while I'm growing up with... It wasn't a natural prejudice, if you understand what I'm trying to say, but I would actually feel, I got some friends that are black, and I hang out with them, I love them to pieces, they're wonderful people, but to this very day, I am so self-conscious about what I say. I'm really careful about my words. I don't want to try to...
Well, what you just said is politically incorrect these days. Oh, I have I have some friends that are black.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, how do you have a conversation? How do we talk today to each other, you know? But I do agree with you that there is this innate, well, it's not innate. I believe that there is an imprinted prejudice that we start to receive. We're not born with it. We've said this so many times, and I wish people could really get that piece.
Yeah. Had I never been told all these different things about different cultures out there, and the Vietnam War had never occurred, and I'd seen these people, I might be amazed that they look a little bit different to me, but it wouldn't be to the extent where, oh, well, you know, this is one of the old kamikazes, or, you know, he's gonna kill me or something like that, you know?
We've gotten so far away from the truth of our origins.
Yeah.
The truth of humanity is who we really truly are, and fully in the beginning as one people.
In my
all
book
children
of, faith,
of the earth.
In my book of faith, that I'm even sometimes apprehensive to talk about, because, you know, we all know the stories of everything. I was pretty much taught that we are all descendants of the original tribes from, you know, back during the day when Noah was around or whatever, you know. And so, literally, we're all family to some extent. You see what I mean?
Yeah, well, you can go in that direction, too. I understand what you mean. I feel that we're all Creator's children.
So do
I. You know,
the
Creator created us, all her children, her children, whatever you want to say, God, Creator, Great Spirit. And I like to say the Mother, Father, because it just makes me feel personally better, because it is harmony and balance.
Well, and I'm not
eliminating
offended by
no
that.
One.
I'm
but
not.
Also what I'm saying is we're just like the children created like a rainbow.
Yeah.
All different colors. And but all we have the same heart. We all have the same, right?
Yeah, and then in creeps this darkness from wherever it came from that decided to start labeling
Don't
and
Don't say wherever it came from. Tell it like it is.
Well, far as I'm concerned, it came straight from, you know, H-E double hockey stick. Because I'm going through life as a child. I had a big heart when I was a child. I ain't changed. I've been the same kid. And now I'm still the same kid. I just look a little rougher because I got mad science hair and such. But nonetheless, I've went through my life filled with love in my heart because of the things that I've seen. I've watched trials and tribulations. As a child, I was like that little monkey looking around at the world and wondering what the heck is going on. And I always felt for people. Anytime there was an injustice in the world, I always felt that it was wrong and you shouldn't treat people like that. And I believe that the majority of all the people alive on this planet started off that way. I believe that they had nothing but love in their heart. And at some point in time, that evil crept out there into the world and started labeling everybody and separating them and deceiving in all different manners of life. About everything.
Well, there's only one direction that I can go with what you just said. Because I'm right there with you. It took me a long time to come to this piece. I can say, you know, that it feels so right to me personally. This is only my perception. It took me many years to come to this because I have identified the wrongs. I have identified the terrible things and the behaviors and the wrongs and the violences, and I've identified all this. It's pretty stunning to me and hurts my heart too, just like you. And I would say something is so wrong here, and the question always is why or who, how could this be, and so on.
Yep.
So after all these many, many years of questions and a journey here of life to get where I am today, I came to only one conclusion, because I do believe that this earth is a sacred living being. I do believe that we are all sacred children. I believe that Creator had a dream vision of this paradise here, and then something, like you said, something came from wherever. No, it didn't come from wherever. My conclusion is the only thing that I can point to directly that would hate something so sacred, that would hate and want to destroy, you know, families, you know, children, love, the pure waters, everything that was created sacred by our God, Creator, would be the one and only, you know, downtrodden, fallen down the whatever rabbit hole called
the devil, Lucifer. Satan, Lucifer,
whatever
demons.
You want to call it. It's not like something that you can, I don't know, it's an energy. To me, it's an energy. It's a dark energy.
Yep.
It's a frequency that needs more of the same in order to survive. It needs fear. It needs anger. It needs hatred.
Yep.
It needs all of that in order to exist.
That's it. And that's what I see.
Say.
That's what I see creeping on the backs of people. I saw this cartoon one time as an animation that somebody had put out there on YouTube. And literally, somebody picked up a whiskey bottle, and there was a demon that coming out of the whiskey bottle down into the person every time they would drink or, you know, smoke or whatever, you know, or shoot needles into their arms. The demons would just, you know, engulf their body and their spirit and stuff like that. And it just seemed, even though it was an animation, it just seemed so on point and realistic to me as to what was going on in the world out there.
And with yeah, that, with, you know, think about this. I'm just thinking, I'm feeling right now the people listening, okay? I'm getting messages. So I'm feeling this response. I'm feeling when I talk like this, when I come to say, share what I've concluded, okay, it's just my personal experience, but I want to say if you put things together, if you really look at it, we all point to certain people. Right now it's pointing to Trump, okay? And it was maybe it was the Bushes, maybe it was somebody else, maybe it's George Soros, maybe it's the elite, maybe it's the Rothschild, maybe it's whomever, it's the Luciferian people, humans. You know, there's something behind this. You got to go further,
yeah.
In my estimation. You have to go back. What make, if you and I are saying, and I truly believe this, and you have said this, Patty said this, Barry said this, we've all said this, we are not born with this hatred, with this violence, with prejudices. We are not born that way, with greed. We are not born that way. So these people, okay, what happened to them? What happened to those we are blaming? Like, they're to blame for the mess we're in. They're the cabal. They're the elite. They're the wealthy. They're the... Okay, what happened to these people? Because we're all pointing to them. They're our problem. They're the ones, the corrupt government, Trump, this, that, so on. So I looked back further. I said, okay, what happened to those people if they were born as a sacred child like you and I? Something interfered. Something came in and is always trying to interfere, by the way. Always trying to attack us who are carrying the light.
Yep.
Putting out a good word, who are in prayer, who are walking in a sacred manner, who are, you know, who are committed to this Mother Earth and life and the children, the coming generations. You have to know when you're on that path, when you are holding the light strong in your heart, you're going to be attacked.
Yeah.
And so these people, you have to have some powerful something inside of you not to be taken off track. And I've been on that edge. We are all, I think, been on that edge, tempted. And what they say, the devil comes, or Lucifer will offer you whatever you could dream of or imagine, you will have it if you sell your soul.
Yeah.
As they say, sell your soul to the devil. But once you walk down that pathway, you become the elite. You become the, you know, the warmonger. You become the greedy one. That's what happens. So that's what I feel has happened here. And there's an agenda based on that entity, whatever you want to call it, that really despises the sacred.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it can only lead in one direction. You know, the more, if I could only take people back in time so that they could literally see through my eyes the difference between back when I was a young man or child, even to the present day, and then play for them that Paul Harvey deal right there, I think that they would get it. I think that they'd see the same thing that I'm seeing, that we're heading down the road to disaster, and there's only one way that this is ever going to get resolved, and that's when people start shining that light that I believe is what's in everybody out there, the goodness that's inside of all the people of this earth. That, you know, I said this one time, if there is only one candle in the darkest cave of this world, that darkness can never win. As long as that candle's lit, it will never be completely dark in that deal. You know, they've said the same thing about, like, police departments, is if there's at least one good person in there, then the whole thing isn't corrupt. You see what I mean?
Well, so the way, what comes to my mind right now is the way to turn upon a different pathway, the way to step onto a different pathway, out of that dark pathway, is to get out of the matrix, is to shut your computer off, to get yourself free of the system so that you can actually go inside your heart and know who you really truly are, that
yep.
You are really one of the original carriers of light and love.
You know,
that's all I'm going to say.
In
right
electricity,
now.
In the old alternative energy and electricity, if you've got one battery, let's say a 1.5 volt battery, and you run it in parallel with each other, you know, side by side, you just got, you know, 1.5 volts at the end. But if you're wise and you run that in series with each other, then now you're up to 3 volts. Now imagine if all the... If we put, like, all the people of the world as batteries, and they were running series with each other, essentially hand-in-hand all the way around the world, and each one of those has to understand that when you become that light that you're trying to share with the world to try to guide people towards our Creator, then you're adding to the power of the individual, if that makes any sense.
That's right. I see we have guests, more guests.
Yeah, hi Patty, hi Barry, how's it going? We ain't got nothing to say today.
Yeah, I'm spent. I haven't got nothing to say.
Yeah. You got nothing to say?
Barbara, you're just getting warmed up, Barbara. You're like the third cell buddy, man.
I'm guessing you guys ain't got nothing to say either, do you?
Which is good. I'm trying to get my coffee in me here to get the brain going.
Yeah.
I just got my first cup poured here, so get a couple sips of that in and I'll probably be able to say something.
Well.
But Patty's here, and she's always got something to say.
I wish I could have found that picture of the monkey that I posted years ago in one of the videos, because that monkey, if you could look in that monkey's eyes, and actually his hair matched mine too. I mean, it was me. All right. And he's looking at the world. Why everybody's fighting and he's just like confused. Can't we all just get along, kind of thing, you know? I couldn't find that particular picture, but it was cute and brilliant at the same time. But that's what I felt like when I looked in the mirror this morning, because I'm looking out there, you know. I get up every Saturday, every Sunday, and sometimes the night before I will actually do research for every single show, and I'll come up with something that I want to lead into the show with today. And today, this is what's it. You know, I don't have nothing. I got nothing to say. You know, and like we were mentioning before the show, while we were, Barbara and I was talking, it'd be a cold day and you know where when we ain't got nothing to say about what's going on in the world. But I don't know. Do you guys see what I'm trying to point out here?
Well, that was a perfect little dialogue there, because it allowed the train to go completely by before I had to come on air.
Well, it's hard. It's hard. It's definitely hard to try to weed through the chaos of the world and come out here and try to be positive and uplifting, because, you know, you guys have been around long enough. You probably heard me get into distress, and if it hadn't been for your words of wisdom and, you know, coming in here and sharing your love with the world and pulling me out of a slump, I may have given up a long time ago. And I'm sure all of y'all felt that at one point in time, that, you know, throw your hands up in the air, what's the point anymore? You know?
Well, I do that periodically on a weekly basis. That's why I go to Barb.
Yeah.
And I come here, because this is a hope broadcast, you know? This is a positive pebble broadcast, one of the very rare and few that exists. But I want to add something to you guys' conversation that you were talking about earlier. And I was listening to you guys, and there are so many more today who don't. You know, we say all these words. We've got all these words that we type, but we don't speak them, you know, and we've got all of these friends on the internet and everything, but we don't touch them. And in our own lives, once we're off of the internet, our doors are shut.
Yeah.
You know, and it wasn't like that before. Before, it was, you deliberately woke up in the morning thinking about what you would do that day, where you would go, the people that you would talk to. Sunday gatherings were looked forward to. They were the day of community, you know, of going to grandma's, and the kids were going to play, and we were going to be with our families. I know it was like that for me.
Those were the best of times.
Yeah, we don't do that anymore. So people they keep losing a little bit more of their humanity with everything that takes us away from that personal aspect of life, you know?
Do you know what I think, Patty?
What?
I think to some extent what we're doing right here with this round table is bringing that back and showing people what it was like back when we were younger.
That's why I like this show so much, you know, Shaziz, because it does remind us that there is another way, that the old way, you know, of communicating, of coming together. We rarely have anything to argue about on this show, you know?
Yeah.
And if we do have disagreements, it's okay, because we accept that each other is different and that we have our own minds and our own histories and things to draw upon. It's okay. The thing of it is that we understand that one key part, that we are all of the same, you know, the same creator. We come from the same place, and hey, that's where we're going.
Yep.
You know, we haven't lost that connection with each other. We haven't, in fact, we need that connection. You know, Barb was talking about how when she went, I forget the name where she went, but everybody was always saying good morning and how are you and things, and then she came back to the States and she
Mexico.
Walked down the street. Yeah, but I can't remember.
Mexico.
Okay. But you know, people here today, they don't look at each other. They deliberately make sure they don't make eye contact. Nobody wants to look at somebody else. And they've got their own things, and they don't want that person in their business. And my gosh, that person might be a bad person, so don't even make eye contact. And when you do, people do have a tendency to look at you really weird. Like, what are you up to? I don't know you, you know? Get away from me.
Yeah, well, that's like kind of that. Hard for me, because I'm kind of like a social guy, and whenever I'm out in public, I'll talk to a complete stranger about whatever's going on in the world. I just do that all the time. I don't know why. Sometimes I do get that look like, who are you? Why don't you go away?
But, you know, the only way that you can change that is to change it. So,
yeah.
And you can only change it if somebody else wants to change with you. So it doesn't matter how much you want to look somebody in the eye. It doesn't matter how much you want someone to know what a good morning it is, or what a good day it is. If they don't want to be a part of that, you're not going to, you know, if they want rather to be in their iPhone or their MP3 player or whatever, their laptop or whatever, then there's nothing you're going to do to shake that, right?
Yep.
Right?
It's
yeah.
You know, when I went through that experience with that turtle down there, it changed my life in such an amazing way. It's just, I had some time to sit down there and actually feel nature. I actually got to feel something that was just so incredibly profound, and I just wished everybody else had the chance to, because when you are in a crowd of people and you hear them all kind of struggling to be kind of like the center of attention, it's like nobody ever kind of sits down there and just listens to what somebody has to say. They might be surprised at some of the wonderful things that they could actually learn about, you know, people. You know, everyone's special as far as I'm concerned. There's not one person out in this world that our Creator didn't give some sort of little special trait that you're never going to get anywhere else but from that person. There's only ever going to be one Patty. You know, there might be a million people named Patty, but there's only going to be one Patty.
Yeah, and you don't know how many people just said, whoop.
Yeah.
You had them scared there for a minute because they thought there would be more me.
Yeah. Well, I think if they could replicate you, you know, I hear about that cloning thing. But would it be?
I think we should bring about a million of them into the world.
Yeah, but would it be the original?
Like you.
Yeah. Would it be the original? Would it have
similar,
the same heart?
No, similar. Similar heart, similar mind.
Well, that's who we got here, right?
Yeah. We don't look alike, but we sure feel alike. It's just, yeah, I don't know.
I don't think the world could take a clone of my insanity. I don't know. I've thought about it a lot. You know, sometimes I can't even take myself, you know.
Really?
here's an example. You are so well loved, my sister, and love to hear you, love to have conversations with you, love to go down the rabbit hole with you, because we always help each other get out. Love to be here on Shaziz's show, listening to him and Barry and everybody that comes in with all one heart. We're all really the same. So, you know, just know you're loved and accepted, and it would be fine to have another couple sisters just like you in the neighborhood. Think of the fun we would have.
And we are interchangeable, you know that.
I do know that, that's for sure.
That's the one thing that laughter, you know? If you can laugh at yourself, the world is so much better and more easily digestible.
Yep.
You know, to me. And that's one thing I love about this panel here, is that we can laugh and we can goof. And in this world today, if you can't laugh, you know, you're really, really, it's like an illness. You know, it's harming you. It's more important today to find that place where you can feel light of heart, where you can feel that you're actually, living, you know, and participating instead of just moving through. And it's important to me to be able to laugh on a daily basis at anything. And if I can't find something funny, then I'm gonna find myself to laugh at, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, that's one thing that Barb brings to me and you guys bring to me. Hey, Two Dog.
How you doing there, brother?
All right, how you guys doing today?
Pretty good. Just trying to share
everything.
Just trying to share some love to the world.
Is Two Dog low, or is it just me? And did Barb fall off for long?
Well, you know, me and Patty.
Go ahead.
She fell off. You know, me and Patty and other people have been doing this now for over 10 years together. And it's like, you know, if I didn't know, I mean, me and Patty got along, it was just that fast. And we've been doing this for over 10 years, like, and I wouldn't change this for anything in the world.
Well, it's a wonderful thing. I had this crazy dream one time. And in this dream, I was standing around, and everywhere I looked, there were coins all over the ground. There was just...
Well, hey,
there were just so many coins all over the ground. And so I'm running around and I'm trying to gather up all these coins because I like struck it rich, you know. And I'm thinking, how am I going to carry all this with me, you know? And then somewhere along that dream, something struck me that I don't need to pick up all these coins. I just need to take what I need. That's it. That, I don't need to be greedy. I just need to pick up a few that would, you know, take care of whatever needs that I had. And I got to thinking about that, and I got to think about all the different things that we've said, the things like, you know, you all know what a candlelight vigil is, right?
Yeah.
Well, when you bring one candle in, and it takes away a bit of that darkness, and then you have another candle come stand next to that one right there, it gets just a little brighter. And the more you do that, the brighter it gets around you. And that's the kind of people that I like to surround myself with. And when all this stuff kind of played out in my head, I finally realized there wasn't nothing that I needed. I mean, I had everything I needed. And whenever... You know, if I ever needed a little bit more light to add to my candle, I could come stand next to one of you guys. And does what I'm trying to explain to you make any sense? I mean, it wasn't.
You know, Shaziz, that's, I could say the same thing about you. And that's why I'm here every single week, whether I'm on air or not, is because I know that if I come here and I listen to your broadcast, that I am going to feel like I am part of something that is good and something that is right, you know? And it uplifts me. It keeps the faith in humanity. Because Barb knows I've been to some pretty dark spots, you know? When I get frustrated and I feel that, oh, woe is me kind of stuff, you know? Barb's there and she'll bring me up. But if I can, I look so forward to Saturdays and Sundays simply because I know that I am going to feed my spirit and it's going to get fed well.
That makes all this worthwhile. That makes every bit of it worthwhile. Just to hear them words, that makes it so much worthwhile, because I was talking to some people just last night about the world in general, and they were talking about, you know, trying to make the world a better place and that kind of stuff, and we all know what the prophecies in the book says and all that kind of stuff, and I'm saying to them, you know, the odds of me ever being able to pull off a miracle and get people, you know, to the table with each other and to be able to make the world a better place, they're against us. You know, the whole entire chaotic scene of what we see unfolding before our very eyes and the path that we see ourselves on, we got our work cut out for us. But I have to remind them about that little deal about the light, you know. One little candle in the darkest cave, that cave can't in any way be completely dark. And if there's hope, even if all looks like it's going to be lost, see, my Creator never said to lay down to evil. You know, I'm not supposed to lay down and give up. I'm supposed to let the power of my Creator flow through me and shine that light to other, to be a kind of like a lighthouse or a beacon to the world. If my words can inspire anyone to, you know, what you just said to me, that to me is what I'm here to do. That's it. I'm no better, no worse than anybody else out there. I'm just here to help be a light, you know, just like you all have been for me on so many occasions through these shows, because it takes a toll on you physically and mentally to try to reach out and find the right words to say to people to give them hope in themselves, to believe that their worth, their self-worth is so much more than they give themselves credit for. And I feel like every single time we lose anyone, that's one less light that we can add to that candlelight vigil that's going to shine the light to a message of hope to the world. You know, people come together on those occasions to show, you know, that they love each other and they care for each other, and they're trying to let the world see that, you know, even in the darkest of times, that this is what humanity is really all about. Am I wrong?
I think you hit it on the head, you know. And I want to say something too, you know, as far as the family here at Shaziz Radio, we cannot forget Stephen in the chat, who is always, always, always ready to pass out the smiles. And I have to say that, Stephen, you rock. You know, you make me smile every week. You make me laugh. I just don't want to forget you either.
Oh no, he's a wonderful soul, man. I'll tell you what, he has put some brilliant links in there. He's done work behind the scenes on the resource page to help people out with information. I got nothing but good stuff and love in my heart for that man. I'll tell you what, he's a wonderful soul, and I'm glad and I'm honored that he comes here every week to listen to these shows and be part of the scene. Maybe one of these days we can talk him into coming on live with us.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
That would be awesome. But I'm glad that he's here.
Yeah,
you know?
Me too.
Yeah. We've had two people fall off the log now. We're going to have to get bigger logs.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, we need a bigger boat. Well.
You know, do you remember when We Are Change first started, way back after, around the time of the Occupy?
Yeah.
And We Are Change came out. Luke Radowski was just very young, doing his first ever radios and things. He was like us, just getting into this. And there was a video that they had put out in California. I don't know if you saw that. Maybe I can pull it up, find it, and pull it up. But when I first started getting into this heavy stuff, we had 9/11, we had the Oklahoma City bombing, we had the Patriot Act. Everything was looking really, really bad. And we were all scrambling, trying to make sense of what the heck is going on. Humanity is just fracturing, and we saw what was coming down. So there was a lot of us that were into a point of where we didn't know who the enemy was, you know? And everybody was in this upheaval of just angst and fear. And so We Are Change put this video out, and what it was they had one, I can't even remember the person that was there, but they had a sign, and they were standing on a street corner, and I think it was Los Angeles, might have been. But don't quote me on that. I'll have to find the video. But there's people milling around everywhere, you know, constant walking by and traffic and all of this stuff. And he's standing there with a bullhorn and a sign. And he's like a sandwich sign, but it didn't have a back on it. I think it was just front. And it said, free hugs. And at first, the people were like, whoa, this guy's a weirdo, you know. Like on the street corner. And the more he would talk to these people, and he'd tell them, you know, I'm not charging anything. And it's free. There's no side effects, you know, except for maybe you might want to hug somebody else, you know, let the love flow. And then finally, one person came up and hugged him. And he hugged that person back. And as soon as he watched it, as soon as the person walked up to him, they were smiling. And when they walked away, they were jovial.
Yep.
They were, you know, really. And then all of a sudden, when people saw that guy walk away feeling that way, all of a sudden people started walking up wanting that hug. And then, because so many people were wanting to hug him and they had to wait in line, they started hugging each other. And turned into one gigantic hug fest. And all of a sudden, all you saw were smiles, people laughing and talking to each other. And I watched that and I thought, you know, this is amazing that you can go into a busy, crowded street where people's eyes are on the ground or anywhere but making eye contact, shunning each other, stepping away instead of making a mistake and maybe bumping into someone. And then all of a sudden, everything stopped. All the hubbub stopped, all the angst stopped, everything stopped, and it turned into, I see you.
Well,
I accept you.
Call me a softy, but had I have seen that particular video, I would have shed tears of joy, because when I see a triumph like that, and that is a triumph, it just, it brightens my heart up. I mean, it's, you know, It's really hard to explain. It's like when you feed the fire of that love inside your heart, it just continues to get brighter. And, you know, watching what's going on in the world, you know, it's hard for people like us to carry around a huge heart to try to make sense of why people would do things to each other. But an instant like that, where for a brief moment in time, people really understood what it really means to be human and would start hugging each other, that to me is a miracle. And for whatever reason, the person decided to stand out there with that sign. That was more brilliance than words can say. That's incredible.
Yeah, it was. It really was. But that's what we do here.
Yeah.
You know, we have invisible signs that say, "I love you." We have invisible signs that says, "Free hugs." You know.
I think I'm going to make up a sign and go stand in a corner today and see what the
hell. Yes. Yeah.
What a great social experiment that would be.
Yeah.
Let's do that. Let's all go make up a sign, free hugs, and stand in a corner and see what happens. And then we can relate to it next week.
But Actually, that's been done before. Actually, somebody did do that. There was a video out where people standing on the streets with a sign saying free hugs.
Yeah, I just told them about that. That was with a
Change.
That's what we were talking about.
We should put that on the back of the Shaziz Radio t-shirt, the one that says about mad science on there, the one I showed you. We should put that on the back of it. It says free hugs on the back of the shirt.
What an awesome deal. Yeah. And I want to talk more about our idea that we had too for mad science, but not right now, but at a later date. I think, I'm not sure if Two Dog needs a hand up back on his log, or if he can join on his own, but he's back.
Cool. Let me just see if I can add him. I see him in the chat. I just don't see him on the screen there. Let me see if I can add him back in. There he is right there. Okay. Yay. All right, well, I hope you're back, brother. Y'all keep disappearing.
I don't see him yet.
I see his picture on my side.
Okay.
So what else don't we have to say today?
Now, no, you know, this whole not having nothing to say thing, it's kind of hard. Because usually once the subject takes life, and that's usually what these shows do, they take on a life of their own. And just speaking from the heart, that's the way to go. Folks listening out there, I want you to understand something. These shows aren't scripted. We don't sit around and contemplate on what we're going to talk about. We just sit there and we tell you from our points of views what we see going on in life. And, you know, some of us see things coming down the line in the future that we're concerned about, because if you listen to the words coming out of our mouth, you can obviously see that we don't want anybody to have to suffer for any purpose under the sun. You know, we want to see people in this world fed. We want to see people in this world sheltered. We want to see needs met. And I'm trying to point out to the world that the only way we're ever going to get those needs met is when we pull together. That's it. It's like that one candle in that cave. You got some of the darkness held back, but you bring somebody else in there with their candle, and it just keeps brighter and brighter. And before it's all said and done, you got this warm, cozy place with everybody together, and, you know, there ain't no darkness. Each and every one of you is that one little candle, that little positive pebble that we keep talking about that sends those ripples out. And if you can shine your light next to my light, and so on down the line, we can chase the darkness back to where it came. Because I tell you right now, darkness doesn't like the light. Darkness doesn't like love. Darkness doesn't like you getting along. Darkness doesn't want you all working together. It wants you to be labeled. It wants you to see differences in one another. It wants you to see fear in each other. That you can't even help somebody on the side of the road because you don't know whether or not they're going to try to harm you or nothing, because society has pretty much told you that it's dangerous to stop and help a stranger. That stranger someday may actually be you. And, you know, I would kind of like to want to have to think somebody would be willing to stop and help me out if I was in trouble. You know, I'm not going to look to see what color a man is or a woman is whenever I try to pull them to safety. I'm not going to look to see that. I'm just going to reach my hand in there and grab that human by the hand and pull him to safety. That's what
we believe. I guess we all have to come to the something inside of ourselves. It's a little piece there that I believe exists. And a lot of stuff has covered it all up, and I think it's about faith. You know, I think these days people have, and for a good reason, you could say, that a lot of people don't have faith anymore, and certainly hope is out the window, you know. But I have to question, looking at the reality of the abundance on this earth, you know, and there is abundance. It's not overpopulated. There's not a lack of food, water, and so on. There should be no hunger in the world, you know. I know things are being messed with and so on, but as you said, she says, together, it's about coming together. That's where we really need to be at this point, not separated from each other. We all have solutions. You have some things that you were gifted with by Creator that you can share to help people. Barry does, Two Dog, you know, Patty, myself. We all have a piece that we were all given to the great puzzle, and others out there listening also. So I think that is the key, that people have to find that piece inside of them that maybe has been covered up or, you know, not, you know, gone silent, that faith and that hope.
Yeah.
That's what
I think the pain that a lot of people are going through these days of these trials and tribulations that the world is actually experiencing right now, I think the pain is one of the things that acts like a boat anchor and is holding the people down. And you know, maybe I can't take away your pain, but maybe I could just relieve it enough that you can actually take a breath. You know, and if I can do that for you with the words coming out of my mouth, or even if you need a hug for Pete's sake, or smile on you, you know, it didn't cost me nothing to smile. It didn't cost me nothing for that hug. It didn't. That's the thing about love. It's just so amazing. It's like an unlimited source of energy. You want to talk about free energy, talk about that energy that's inside the human heart that if it's allowed to come out, there's so much that we could accomplish. So much. I mean, you see it in days when there's things that go on, like we mentioned disasters like Katrina or Texas or something like that, that people that don't even know these people are coming together with supplies and resources and everything that they can to try to ease the burden of those folks. That's what I
mean,
believe.
These days, people are getting on airplanes to go to Puerto Rico.
Yep.
They're getting on airplanes to go to Puerto Rico to help the people there.
And that's
they don't have any relatives there. They don't know anybody there.
Yeah, and they may very well be risking their safety to get there, but they're not looking at their own self. They're not worried about themselves. They're worried about somebody they'd never even met before. You know, to me, that's what a hero's made out of. You know, these people that go into what they like to classify as third world countries, I hate even saying that phrase because I don't feel like it should be that way. I think that they're less fortunate for a reason. I think it's an intentional less fortunate, such as, you know, Africa is probably one of the most mineral-rich countries in the world, but it's not for the people. It's for the elite up there and other elites from other nations that basically steal from these people. That's their land. That's their home. They should be able to have those resources to uplift their communities and help to fight sickness and hunger and homelessness over there. But if the rest of the world has, you know, nothing but greed and want for power in their hearts, and they're taking advantage of these people, it's up to the people, the average Joe, to put a stop to it, because you know you ain't never going to get the representation that we've got to do the right thing. When somebody's behind the scenes offering them bribes or blackmailing them for whatever reason that they might have done something wrong and they don't want it to come to light, they're not going to do the deal, and that's the whole thing. You know, you can't expect these folks to be right when they've been compromised all along. You know, they took bribes or they did something wrong, and if they get in trouble, then, you know, somebody has something to hold over their head. Most of the average Joe, you know, aren't like that. They're not going to take a bribe to watch somebody else die or suffer. They're not going to do that if they can avoid it. I honestly have a faith in humanity because I believe our Creator didn't make any trash. I believe our Creator only made treasure. Gave each of us just a little piece of that gift, the talent, you know, and gave it to us all with a thought back in mind that if you could somehow get these people to come together and put this piece of puzzle with that piece of puzzle, and it just dominoed to the extent where now everyone on this earth could literally see the big picture. I honestly think that this life that we live, as short as it may be, is a learning experience. Every day is a learning experience. And the words of wisdom that come up out of your mouth are that little positive pebble that you can throw in the pond. You could either choose to raise somebody up to the highest reaches of heaven, or you can lower them down to the lowest, darkest, deepest abyss. Now, I choose to try to uplift. And even if my journey is going to be continuously uphill battle, and even if I may never even succeed in the end, I feel like that my life has taught me enough that the real meaning of life is you. It's not me, it's you. It's us, it's we. We the people, just like those three big words on the top of the Constitution that's supposed to separate us from the government and point out to this system that we've actually allowed to run roughshod over us, that we're the ones that's really in charge with divine powers or whatever, freedom from our Creator. Now, nobody has the right to take away you. That's all there is to it. You know, I don't know what more to say. You know?
Well, you know, if you live this life, and from the time you're born till the time you leave, and within that span, that short span of time that we call a life, if you can, throughout that experience, retain the ability to love, to hope, to see beauty, and to accept your own beauty, then you have won. This world, you know, it wasn't always like this. There were always struggles. And in every generation, there was something to overcome, something that needed to be fixed within the family, within the society. Every generation. And there were those people who stepped up to try and correct the things that were wrong, that separated us, that kept us from this love, this hope. Every generation. Now we live in a time where we have so many diversions, so many reasons not to hope, so many reasons not to love, so many reasons not to be a part of the life, that many people, they falter. It's not that they are evil people. It's not that they are bad people. There is no one. The majority of us simply want one thing. We want to live in peace. We want to know that our children will live a life worthy of living, that they will not have to suffer needlessly, that they will not have to do without, that they can be what it is they choose to be. This is the hope of every generation, isn't it?
Yeah.
But right now, in this time, more than ever, because there are so many ways to separate yourself from humanity, from each other. There are so many reasons that we can have doubt today. There's so many reasons that we can have fear. and angst. And if we don't pull together, if we don't reach our hand out to that person, if we constantly look at them and say, you're the problem, then we become the problem.
Well, that story that was shared about the free hugs, if that isn't a shining example of exactly the power that we've been trying to point out to each individual, one person standing there holding a sign that said free hugs, when he finally broke that ice layer that was around all those people around there, and then one person saw what that felt like, what they saw that, how that person felt as they walked around there and said, you know what, I need a dose of that. That spread. That's that positive pebble. That is the true power of the love that's in the human heart. If you choose to use that and make you a sign, like Barry said, we should all go out there and make us a sign that said free hugs. You know? And you choose to do that, you choose to smile on somebody every day you go out there and you spread that around, you know, eventually that little wave will reach every side of the pond. And yet the more people you get to come in to realize that they have more power than they think they do, you know, people don't think about things before they do it. Sometimes they treat each other poorly, thinking, you know, that it's like taking for granted that your loved ones are always going to be there. And then the last word that you said to them was something mean because you were angry at them. No, I want the last word that I say to anyone I meet to be a positive word. I want to spread that positivity, so no matter what happens, I ain't got no regrets, because I told them how I felt. I loved them, and they know it. That's it. Every time I leave the table here, I'm going to tell you I love you, because I do. And that is power. That's not the wrong kind of power. You know, the wrong kind of power is trying to enslave humanity and try to manipulate people into to bending to your will. We're not trying to bend nobody to our will. We're not even trying to convince anybody that our own spiritual journey is the right spiritual journey, because we're all here learning together as we speak. But we came to realize that no matter what path we came from or how we're going, that humanity is always going in the same direction. And when we get there, we'll find out who was right and wrong. But in the meantime, if we're going to be the founding fathers and the mothers and the sisters and brothers and aunts and uncles and so on of our children and our children's children's future, I for one want to put at least one good stone down there to smooth that path, because I know what it feels like to come down that road. That's where I'm at.
I agree. Yeah. But I haven't heard from Barry. We still haven't heard from Two Dog, who keeps falling off his log.
Barry, you got any words of wisdom, brother?
I'm here right now.
Oh, Two Dog's here.
Well, Patty kind of hit it on the head there when she really started talking.
Oh, Barry, I'll wait after you.
Yeah, you know, Patty kind of really resonated with a couple thoughts I had about how society's been divided and how we've had humanity taken out of society. How we can't communicate with each other anymore. And really, we've got to look back to the last 20, 30 years of our short
when
history.
When he finally broke that ice layer that was around all those people around there, and then somebody's radio just came on. What that felt like. What they
what?
Saw that. Somebody's that radio's playing in the background. They around there and said, you know what?
Okay.
I need to go to sleep.
Anyways.
Sorry, that was me. Sorry to interrupt you, Barry. Go ahead. I got it. It's fixed.
Yeah, the only point that I really wanted to make here today is that, yeah, we as a society, as a human being, as what we're really supposed to be on this planet, that's been taken away from us. And if we sit back and look at all the methods and the mechanisms they've used to divide us, to kind of get society where we are today, where, you're right, you walk into a mall, and if you look at somebody in the eye, they automatically have a negative reaction, because you're not supposed to do that. Well, I'm the opposite. I go into malls and I say hello to everybody I see. And I make a point of making eye contact with people. It's a simple little thing, but it seems to have an amazing effect on people. And I think I'm going to go make one of these signs up and go stand in front of the mall and videotape it. And just kind of do a little experiment in my own little town here and see what people do when we put up a sign saying free hugs. What kind of response, kind of, you know, a project for the day today.
cool.
Did you see the post that Stephen put in the chat there? There's a guy standing there with free hugs, with a sign that says free hugs. Guy next to him says deluxe.
Deluxe hugs, $2. Deluxe hugs, $2.
Dang.
Well.
Capitalism, you know?
That is fun. Capitalism at its finest.
Oh, man. You gotta laugh. Sometimes people are creative. I tell you
yeah.
What.
You know, that's one of the most beautiful things about humanity, about the human race, is that we can create, and we can create anything that we put our mind to. There is nothing that we can't create. We just seem to be following the lead of people whose creative tendencies lead us in a place that takes us away from who we are. But there are, you know, I live in Kansas. I don't know if many people have been through this state, but we're nothing but wheat fields, right, and grazing land for cattle and such. But as you're going down these roads that are endlessly just nothing but fields on either side, acres on either side, all of a sudden you see this one acre where this man has taken all his old farm machinery that doesn't work anymore, and he sculpted them. And he sculpted them into people, and he sculpted them into dragons and dinosaurs and all different manner of sculptures of life. And it's amazing. And then you go down the road, and there's a guy who puts up signs every, say, 100 feet. And these signs say, you know, hey, you're super, you're beautiful, I love you, it's a great day, you know, and all of these different things. These are people that go out of their way to express to people, you know, and show them, this is my creation, this is my expression of life. And it's all over Kansas. People in Kansas, they do, I guess it's all you've got to do when all you have is wheat fields. You create things out of your wheat fields and what you've got, you know. But this is the amazing thing about people that we discount today. Nobody acknowledges the creativity of people. Look what we did with the internet. I mean, this was a CIA thing where they used to communicate with each other, and then they turned it over to the people, and they let the people come on this internet, this worldwide internet, and express themselves. Look at the expressions that we have on this platform. How many different expressions, how many different ways of creativity, the art that's put out, the theater that's put out, the poetry, the music, all of these things that are here. I mean, it blows me away sometimes to see how people can create and are willing to do so. That's a big part of who we are. And we can create anything we put our mind to. There's nothing that we can't create. The problem that we have is that nobody wants to create anymore in the real world. Everybody wants to create on the web, you know, where it's kind of like it's sanitized. You can't touch it, you can't feel it. You go to Facebook, oh, that's a happy picture, giggle, giggle, ha, ha, ha. And then you're off to something else, you know. It didn't touch you. It didn't reach out and grab a hold of you and hug you. You can't go up and knock on the door and say, I think your art is brilliant, and I'd like to take a walk through your wheat field if I could to look at your art and walk with this person and learn about his life and learn about his loves and his creativity, what it was that inspired him. These are the parts that we're missing, that touch of humanity, that connection with each other, the willingness to be able to listen to the stories, you know?
Yeah. I see the internet as a mixed blessing, you know? It's kind of like what I said earlier, Pandora's box, now that it's open. To me, the internet's a tool. You know, I understand that what's going on the internet is the internet is actually dragging minds towards it, you know? And there's a battle going on out here that a lot of people don't see. You know, there's a battle to sell you something. There's a battle to convince you of something. There's a battle for knowledge and just every subject under the sun you can find on the internet. All the research available out here is just so incredible. And if this was used properly as a tool to reach out and touch those minds in a positive way and to focus them in on doing research on the internet, but then getting out in the real world and implementing those solutions on a real-time basis, you know, getting out there and doing like what Barry said. He's going to take a camera out there and he's going to make a sign and say free hugs on there, and maybe just start off a domino effect of other people doing the same doggone thing. This is how you get results in this world. These are the solutions that are possible. The creativity of what some individual just thought about, putting on a sign, free hugs, and standing out there and showing people the true power that the human mind and heart and soul has. I mean, when I told everybody about that little picture that I showed about the little baby and how the baby, the people did in the background just walking around or walking away, and this one lady, she wasn't gonna have that. She literally went in there and saved this child's life, and then a year later to see the results, that to me is a miracle. And the story about the hugs and people's reaction and everybody in the crowd finally hugging each other, that to me is a miracle. That is the true potential of humans. And I believe that if used properly, this internet could be a blessing as opposed to a curse. We got the opportunity right now. We may never have even met each other had it not been for the capability that we have before us to reach out across the world and touch somebody else's heart, clear across the globe or whatever you believe this world that we live in. And I see that this is at least a chance to steer us away from the path that I believe we're going on, because of all the things that were told to me via the mainstream media, the alternative media, the things, the controversies going on in government and all that kind of stuff. Those individuals that are running this world may have the money. They may have the castles and the power, and that's only because we, the people, allow it to be so. If we ever decided to come together and exercise that true power that is within each and every one of us, that I feel like is from our Creator gave us that power and gave us that free will to choose what kind of world we want to live in, what kind of world we want to create. And you can see a reaction in nature. When you do the right thing, you can see a positive reaction in nature. I mean, I got to spend a lot of quality time with a turtle, for Pete's sake. And that turtle looked at me as if I was something special, and I looked at that turtle as if that turtle was something special, because we were. We literally experienced something that most people don't even have the opportunity, or even if they did have the opportunity, wouldn't recognize that gift. There's so much possibility that I want to share at least the story with you so that you can go out there and recognize a blessing when you see it. Every single day, each and every one of you probably step over 100 miracles or more. It's a miracle half of us are even alive from the paths that we've came down and the things that we've had to deal with and the heartaches and the trouble and the darkness that we've had to come up against to get here to be able to say what it is that we're saying to you right now. We don't want you to go down the path that we had to go down. And we don't want the world to continue on the road to disaster that we see coming to us. You know, maybe it's not a doomsday scenario. Maybe it's a self-fulfilled prophecy where we're going to tear each other apart and the darkness wins. I, for one, want to fight as hard as I can with as much as I got with the gifts I've been given to avoid that situation. What's your guys' thoughts on it?
Well, it's just this, if I can, man, as long as this thing will let me do it, you hit it on something
Did anybody hear what Charles had to say?
And that is, you know, as far as my whole personal life, can you hear me all right?
Yeah, talk loudly in your mic. And
can everybody hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you now.
Continue.
Keep going.
Okay. All right. So basically what I'm trying to say is, you know, there's been a lot of... in my personal life, okay? You know, I've been shot at, stabbed, thrown through windows and everything else, and I'm still here doing what I'm doing now. I have no animosity because it's the brotherhood of man that I'm trying, and if that's the wrong thing, then I'm wrong. But black, white, yellow, red around the world, we're trying to, and, you know, after all I've been, I'm still trying to stand for the Creator and for my earth, mother, and everything else, and trying to bring people to get together with everything I've been through. So if I can do it, anybody can do it.
Yeah, I agree, brother. I agree, and I believe we all feel that same exact way. That if we can get where we're at and try to do what we're doing, you know, that's the example needs to be set for everybody else out there. Folks, it's up to you to choose where you want to go. What do you want to do with the power that has been gifted to you? You know. The power of your words and your actions and the life you lead, the circle you create, it's yours. There's only one of each of you. There will only ever be one of each of you. There's only one Barry, there's only one Two Dog, only one Barbara, only one Patty, only one Shazia, only one Steven. There will never, ever be anyone who can do or say things the way that you do. You're that unique. And that makes you, in my eyes, and everyone else's who understands it and gets it, that makes you special. It's as simple as that. You back, Barbara?
Oh, I'm listening. Sorry.
It's like we got like a popcorn machine going, people dropping off and coming back.
I know when you're talking about really good stuff, there's all kinds of things happening,
beep, beep,
right?
Beep,
yep.
Beep, beep, beep.
That's what happened.
Well, it's like that.
Sharing good thoughts.
It's like if that dark side out there just doesn't want us to get this message out to the world. But you know something? We persevere. And we've done this for, like Charles said, you guys been at it for 10 years. I don't even remember how long I've been at it. But we still do the same thing. And if you folks out there listening are interested to see what it was we were saying back then, you go back in time on them podcasts, because it's like a time capsule out there waiting for you with a bunch of goodies in there. And you listen to what we said back there, we've been consistent all along. We've been pushing the same message, and we'll continue to push the same message because we believe it to be true. That's it. What'd you say,
Bert? You know what? We sit here and we look at the world today, and there's enough. Believe me, there's enough to have us just fall down and give up.
Mm-hmm.
There's enough going on. But true power is being able to see with open eyes and still retain the beauty that you came here with, and to be able to express that beauty even in the face of what we see happening today. We can't take it away. It's not, there's no easy button. There's no switch that we can flip, you know, and bring everything back to good. It doesn't work that way.
Nope.
The good doesn't come from what you see in your world. The good comes from what you see within yourself. And if we wake up every day with an attitude of defeatism, with an attitude of, oh, it's all going to, you know what, and there's nothing we can do about it, then that is who we become. But, and we give away our power. We give away the very essence of what we are about. The ability to change the world comes from within each of us.
I'm
and
glad
in
you
our
said
mindset
that.
And how we look at world, at the world.
I'm glad you said that, Patty, because folks, you need to understand something. When the darkness wants to go to war, when the elite want to go to war, who do they come to? They come to you, because the darkness needs you to do their deeds, just like the light needs you to do their deeds. You see what
you know,
I'm saying?
You know, I feel that I know there are people out there that may be listening that are really in a hard place. You know, and I know they're maybe sitting there listening to us and they're still in a hard place. You know, they might be saying, you know, yeah, well, you're talking about it, that won't work for me, or you have no idea what a hard place I'm in and what I've gone through. And, you know, I can understand that. It's not so easy. We're all talking really truthful things and good stuff and important stuff. And we are really speaking what is happening, speaking about what is happening in the greater picture. But coming right down to individual person who's sitting out there just feeling completely lost and how difficult their life is and how they've struggled and nothing seems to be working and they don't know which way to turn, you know? So it's hard for people to bridge that gap to say, okay, I'm going to believe that there is an elite cabal and I'm going to believe that there's a darkness that's trying to manipulate me and that there is abundance, that there is love, that there is good things, that I have something that I can offer and I can make a change and I can make a difference. And not only that, I am significant. It's hard for some people to come to that. I get that.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm right there. I'm not ignoring those people.
Well, there's...
And I'm not going to sit here and spout all what I know is true in my heart and expect everybody to go, oh, yeah, I got it now. That's it for me. I'm fine now. I'm not going to be naive to think that that's possible for a lot of people who are really, really in a dark place. So I just want to let everyone that's in that place, if you are in that place, know that I feel you and I know it's not easy, you know. We're all talking about our own personal experiences and the research we've done for over years and years and see maybe a bigger picture, you know. And what were you going to say?
Well, I was just saying, if you just stop for a moment and think about it, yes, Barb, I agree with you 100%. There are people out there who are suffering in ways that they're losing ground and they see no way out. And it's very, very hard when you're in those positions to be able to say, oh yeah, well, it's all within me and how I look at life, you know. But think about this. It's because we are in this place within ourselves that we find ourselves in the position that we are in now. If we would have all kept within us this ability to see life as it truly can be, then it would be that way. If we were all willing just to stand up and reach out to the other person, things would change immediately.
Yeah.
The person who's losing their home, there are people out there who can afford 10 of those homes. But that person is losing their home, and no one's standing up with their hand out. It used to be in a community when someone was suffering, that community came together because within them they knew who they were and they knew about love and they knew that there were good things that they could create from that. Today, that is what is being obscured.
Yep.
It's still there.
Well, we know all that, yeah, but that's not the solution for that person who's sitting there in the dark feeling like I can't go on.
Well, I think
I'm just bringing that up.
But maybe it's a solution for everyone, a mindset.
No,
a mindset.
I know it's a solution, sis. I do get it. That's why we're talking about this, because in our whole self, we know there is a solution. I'm just looking at how can we... I don't know. Reach out.
That's how we do it.
I think I got a possible answer for those individuals who are finding themselves in that position. Look, in my spiritual journey, there's this phrase about putting on the full armor of God. And I'm not going to press God on those out there who are going through this deal right now. I'm just going to say to you that your brothers and sisters out there, in my view, are the full armor of God. If you put your brothers and sisters beside you, if you stand with them, if you walk over to your family and you tell them, look, hey, I'm going through some really hard times, I need to hang out with you for a while if you don't mind, that you just put on that armor, because those folks are going to be there for you and shine that light. You know, I understand there's a lot of broken.
I can only say my own experience, because I've been in the dark. I've been in that place where I couldn't go on, and I nearly took my own life. I didn't have a sense that there was any hope, and I've been there. And the only thing I can say for myself is that what you're talking about, Shaziz, is that connectedness.
Yeah.
You know, we lose that connectedness to our Creator, to our Source, to God, Great Spirit, whatever you want to call it, and that's the only thing. And it's almost like when people reach the point of the bottom, maybe they haven't reached the bottom enough to finally reach up or look up and say, I need help. I need help, and who am I talking to? I'm going to ask for that help from Creator. And something happens. Like, I feel when you're in the darkest place, eventually a little light starts to shine. Something happens. You know, so I'm just saying to hang on and don't lose faith. You know that that light will come, that light will shine, something will shift, you know. I mean, I watched a video of this young boy who was 18 or 19, moved into a new neighborhood in California, and he had a neighbor, an old woman. He noticed she'd spent, like, nights out on the couch or in her car with her dogs, and he noticed she never went in the house. And he wondered why. You know, he got to know her, and when he got to go into the house, it was a disaster. You couldn't live in there. It was the worst nightmare in that house, because, well, her husband died. She was left on her own. She couldn't take care of things by herself, and things started to pile up on her, really pile up on her. She finally couldn't live in the house. She went out in her car. That's where she slept.
Wow.
So he said, this can't happen. He just felt so much like he wanted to help this woman, and she was in her outside living in her car with a house right there with her little doggies, and she was all alone, you know, wasn't eating right, wasn't taking care of herself and so on. And he put out a call on Facebook for people who wanted to maybe help a little bit this woman, to get her, you know, help her in any way they could. Well, he got such responses. I mean, the house needed new electricity. There was no power. On and on and on. It was falling apart. That's how long this was going on. Long story short, he did help her. People came from out of the woodwork to help. Electricians and plumbers and all kinds of people came.
It's amazing.
And it changed her life. People got together in the neighborhood. They brought food. They cleaned up. They helped this woman to feel a part of their community, whereas nobody was paying attention. She was in the dark.
I've watched that happen over and over and over again here in Kansas. You know, I came from Louisiana. I've spent more of my life in Kansas than actually the state where I was born. And I came from a hostile environment. Louisiana is quite different from any other state in this country as far as the way the people have had to live. It was a struggle and a survival against the powers that be for people just to live their lives in freedom. You know, these were fishermen. I grew up with fishermen. I grew up with people who lived on the land and with the land. There was no going to the supermarket every weekend or once a week or anything. These people, their struggle was an everyday thing, and they had to fight the government of Louisiana to be able to survive. So they were rough. It was a very untrusting area and stuff. So yet still, the people who lived in the swamp in these small, little, tiny communities of maybe 34, 40 people, they managed that whenever anything of anyone was in need, they came to everybody and they said, "We've got to go help so-and-so." And so everybody got together and went and helped so-and-so. When the floods came, the people of the swamp, that small community, are the ones that helped each other. There was no people coming out there from the state to help or anything. There were no checks coming in the mail. And outside of that community, though, you'd get robbed blind. You would be raped, murdered. You know, it was a war zone. And I moved my children to Kansas for a better life. And I came here, and it was like moving to a different planet, because all of a sudden, the people of this state, everyone was there for you if you were in need. You couldn't break down on the side of the road and be there for more than 5 minutes without somebody stopping to help you. You couldn't have an issue in your home without your neighbor saying, "Hey, you're missing a couple of shingles up there. How about I help you get that this weekend?" This is how the people of this state are. There's nobody who, when they are in need, cannot find help in this state. And I've seen it too in the natural disasters. When the tornadoes came through and they wipe out towns, people from this state come together. They don't care what color you are. They don't care what religion you are. They don't care of your political persuasion. None of that ever comes out. The only thing that comes out is, what do you need? And this is what I've got. And nobody's got their hand out saying, "Pay me." What they're actually saying and have said so many times is, "No, because there's going to be a day when I need it, and you're going to help me, or somebody's going to help me." This is a mindset that is not, it's not rare. It is out there, yet we're afraid to step out nowadays. We're afraid of everything. And the people who are in bad, dire straits are not asking for help. They are sitting there thinking nobody is going to help them, because they keep trying to go to the government or the state to get help. And the governments in the states, they don't want to help. So we're asking the wrong people. We're putting our faith in the wrong people instead of in each other in our communities. We're trying to get the person or the entities that are causing the struggling to help us out of this struggle. And they're not about that. We need to have a new mindset. We've got to start coming out of our shells. We got to start coming out and saying, you know, maybe a good thing is go to your local churches and stuff. You know, these people are always willing to help if you're in need. And telling them, why don't we just join together? Why don't we just build a big community outreach within our communities that say that when someone is in need, if they need their grass cut, you know, if they need somebody to go to the grocery for them, if they need, and do this out of the goodness of your heart, not what you're expecting to get out of it, you know. Stephen put something in the chat here and I'd like to read that. It said, the deepest secret is that life is not a process of discovery, but a process of creation. You are not discovering yourself, but creating yourself anew. Seek, therefore, not to find out who you are, but seek to determine who you want to be. And that's by Neil Donald Walsh. And it's true.
It's
brilliant. Today, we've lost sight of that. We've lost sight of the ability that we have to help each other. And like Barb was saying, there's people out there suffering who are saying, hey, ain't nobody reaching out their hand to me. Don't tell me to feel all happy and go lucky. I'm the one who's suffering here and nobody's stepping up. Well, where are the people that should be stepping up?
Well, I'll tell you one thing for sure. I had to step up myself. You know, I had to come to a realization because I was going through a really dark spot in my life, but I thought, you know, there wasn't nothing I could do. Everything was just too overwhelming. And I had to finally realize that I couldn't do this by myself. If your darkness is overshadowing your life to the extent that you feel so worthless or negative or that, you know, there's no hope whatsoever, man, I couldn't emphasize this more. Because I took that first step towards somebody else who was, you know, willing to sit down and listen to me, that person was a miracle in my life. That person saved my life. And sometimes you really got to go out and seek help, even though you don't want to do it. And I don't mean, you know, necessarily psychiatric help or anything like that. I'm talking about finding you somebody like Patty or Barbara or Barry or, you know, Two Dog or Steven. You know, these folks out there, they do exist. You see them all the time when, like Patty was saying about the tornadoes and stuff, you know, down in Kansas. I remember when that was all going on, when there was a whole town got wiped out. And there were people coming from not just Kansas, but all over. They were coming from Missouri and different states, and they were coming in to help to rebuild that community. Those people exist. They really do exist.
And you should see that community now. It's called Greensburg, Kansas.
Yep.
And it is totally, totally self-sufficient as far as energy. The houses are all built to be able to be as efficient as possible. They have wind generation, solar, all of these different. When the people came in to help rebuild this, they all sat down with the people of the town and they said, this is what we want to do to help you. And can you imagine the cost to rebuild a whole town?
Yeah.
But no money exchanged hands.
No, there were people donating everything. Everything from supplies to food to whatever necessary to bring them people back up.
And it was amazing. It was amazing.
I'm telling you, folks, if you're out there and you feel you find yourself in that darkness, don't give up out there, because there are people out there. All you got to do, sometimes you really got to get out of the dark corner of your house and just go out there and seek somebody. Sit down next to a stranger and just say hi. That's all there is to it. You might be surprised. That person you sit down and talk to might just have the words of wisdom that you may need to hear at that point in time. And don't ever think yourself to be worthless, because that's not the case. And it never, our Creator didn't create any trash. He only created treasure. And even though you're going through some trials and tribulations right now, look around you out there in the world. You're not going through it alone. We're all going through it together. And some of us kind of realize that if we put our candles together, we get that candlelight visual. You know, that candlelight visual where everybody's standing there and it just... it's amazing. I seen one on YouTube quite some time back, but I could not believe how many people had gathered for as far as you could see in this video, all the way back into the horizon and around the corners. There were just candles after candles after candles of people coming together for a common cause to show their love and be together. That light is out there. And shoot, man, you could come right here. I'll help be your candle. I'll help be part of that armor of God that you need. You know, and I'm sure that anybody else on this panel right now would do the same thing. You got. When you come to Shazoo's Radio, you're at home. You know, this ain't the only home out there. I'm sure there's other people that are saying what we're saying right now because they get it. But you know, sometimes you really got to reach out. Sometimes you got to be the first person to make that step, to step up out of that darkness, because it is so easy to lay there and just allow evil to climb all over. You know, it's so easy. It's so easy. When you get, I've been in points in my life where things just seem so bad and so overwhelming, I was just ready to give up. You know, it even happened to me on the show many a times, because when we talk about these subjects that we talk about and how overwhelming the chaos is in the world, and we're sitting there and we're trying to put out a positive message all the time, it's not always easy to speak words of wisdom when you're so angry and frustrated at what's going on in the world. You can't look at a starving baby picture and then not feel something in your heart if you got goodness in your soul. You can't do it. And it makes you sad that you think that somebody out there in the world would allow this to happen. And then the first thing that a lot of people do is they turn around and they spin that at God and say, well, why, if God was so loving, why would he allow this to go on? He didn't.
He gave us free will.
Yeah, he said don't do these things. Just like any father or mother who leaves their home with the children and says, well, you know, I got to go to work. When I get home, I want you to have the place in order and be, you know, and everybody be getting along. And it's so, you do what your mom and dad ask and everything goes well. But the time you say, well, look, maybe I was just going to do this anyway because mom ain't around. And then when you get hurt, you see my point, guys?
Yeah, and you know, I can say, Shaziz, we come on the show and we talk about how we feel that things would be so much better, and they would if we could change the world overnight to be what we believe in our hearts, then it probably would. But even we are overcome by the suffering and by the anger and the hate that seems to be so prevalent today. Barb knows. She said just recently, within the last couple of weeks, you know, I tell Barb all the time that Creator sent her to me, because even though I see and I try to see the goodness and the light, and I try to put that out there, sometimes, because the angst is so bad, and it's no one seems to hear or want to hear about the peace, about love, about community, about these things. They only want to wallow in this hate and this anger that is being put out there. It gets to me. And I get to the point where I say, what use? You know, what good am I doing? It's no use anymore. Barb has pulled me back from the brink I don't know how many times. And like Lucius is and Barry, you know, when I'm in these places, and they are dark places, I lose myself. And it's only through hearing the words of people who also share that same desire to bring back the truth, the love, and the understanding of who and where we come from, that I am still here today, willing to come on and speak of these things that are in my heart. This is what we need to I don't know how we can package it.
Do you remember a conversation we had one time about the Valley of Blessings? Well, essentially, that's all the trials and tribulations that you go through that, you know, makes life seem to be so incredibly rough. It was basically an answer to the question of why God would allow suffering in the world, is that during these times is what defines us as the people that we are. Well, yesterday I saw a video, it saddened my heart. It was a lady that started talking, and she was really emotional, and she kind of crying, and she was telling about a video that she had saw where there was a man who suffered from some autism, and he was talking about how there were people that were saying that the world needed to be rid of people that had mental disorders. And he was asking that the people would, you know, save his life. You know, he was afraid that these people wanted to get rid of him because of his condition. Well, the lady that was telling the story about that, she said that at one point in time she was an atheist, and she basically despised any conversation of God because of the fact that you know, all the suffering in the world. But then as time went on, and she had an autistic child of her own, and she had had all these experiences with this child, she realized that that child had had so many times where, in her relationship with her estranged husband, was a, you know, abusive type of relationship, and that child had intervened on many occasions to make her life at least tolerable. And the innocence of a child like that, that has a disability, you know, Down syndrome or autism or any of these things that we hear about these days, they ain't got nothing but love in their heart. And to think about what that child has actually gone through themselves, the suffering that that child, maybe they can't move their limbs like everybody else, and so everything's a struggle for them to get to one place to the next. Why would God allow that, is what she was originally thinking. But then when she finally come to the realization that that child was a benefit to her, it was a benefit to her family, and all these children are benefits to society, because had nobody ever had that problem, you wouldn't know the compassion of people who cared enough to care for these people. And so she said that if she had the power to literally push a button and rid the world of all these diseases, these debilitating diseases that cause this suffering around the world, that at one point in her life she wouldn't have hesitated to push that button, but now she has to sit there and think, if these people weren't going through that suffering, if they weren't having to walk this miserable path or whatever, then would the rest of the world ever know the meaning of true love and true compassion, that somebody would step outside of their comfort zone and do something to try to comfort this person? Does that make any sense to you guys?
Well, I have to say, Shaziz, that you're right. The one thing that I've always felt is the children, people with these debilitating illnesses or Down syndrome or autism, people who are not whole as we consider the body to be whole. To me, they've walked such a sacred path, because the majority, especially the children, even through the suffering that they go through on a daily, and you can't imagine what it is for these people to have to deal with on a daily basis, these children having to deal with bodies not working, their minds not whole. Yet the one aspect that comes through are these children. These people are full of joy and love. I have never met a Down syndrome child, and I've met quite a few, that did not greet the world and every living thing with happiness in their heart.
Yep.
It is a testament to the power of love. And maybe that's why they're here, is to show us.
Yep.
You know?
Well, she said that she didn't want to make it sound like she was glorifying the disease, because if there was a way to cure it, she said she would give her child the pill to cure that disease, you know, in an instant. So she wasn't there to glorify it, but what she wanted to her point that she was trying to make to them, that these people are a benefit. You know, their suffering has benefited people. I mean, as terrible as that may sound, look at what we've talked about here today. We've walked down some pretty rough paths. And had we never walked down those pretty rough paths, would we be the same people saying the same things with love and compassion in our heart had we not ever experienced that? You know, I think that in the true wisdom of God, God does things, you know, not on our time or even to our understanding. But the true wisdom of God, had I never seen anybody in this world suffering, and had I not let that light inside me and my heart, come out, I may not be the man that I am today. I may be selfish. And if that were me, if I were in that position, I think that I could literally go through that kind of suffering if I knew that suffering that I had was going to benefit the rest of the world. You know, I don't know. What do you guys think?
Can anybody hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Trouble here. But, okay. Now, you talk about a child. We're supposed to help all our children. I mean, they're the next generation in itself. And you talk about what...
Oh, I think we lost him again. Doggone it.
Creator, I was in your... I went from a...
Can everybody try to mute their mic to see if we can open some bandwidth?
I'm right here.
Yeah, we're going to mute our mics so that we can see if we can help you talk. All right, go ahead.
You okay? I was wondering if... Well, you know, you... Can you...
Yeah, just keep talking. I muted my mic so I couldn't tell you I could hear you. Yeah, that ain't working. Doggone it. We got to get him a better internet connection.
Can you hear me? Okay.
Yeah.
This is the same.
Yeah, just keep talking.
As far as God is and the blessed, we're here to help out here. You know, they're next to itself. Okay. Okay. Now, you talk about miracles. I was one within a miracle, as far as a miracle itself, I was just an 8-year-old beaten and sleeping at the guard. And I'm 58 years old and living quite well. So there's a touch. I mean, I
went. Yeah, doggone it. Sorry, too, Doug. It just cutting out so bad. I wish there was a way we could fix his connection.
Yeah, I'm not hearing anything being said up this end, guys.
Yeah.
It must be a 2-node Wi-Fi connection.
Yeah.
Not a bad connection.
We got to get him a better...
Or got to get him a better connection.
Yeah. Hey, 2-Dog, I got an idea.
Not a garbage can to bump the support, you know, a mixer. I'm done. That, you know, that's what I'm talking about here.
Yeah.
Okay.
2-Dog, can you write your message down in the chat room and one of us will read it out for you?
Okay.
I hope he got that. So, what's your thoughts, Barry?
My thoughts are that our government in Canada has really gone over the edge. That they're totally insane that they just legalized euthanasia of a child. If that child has a physical disability, it is now legal in Canada for a parent to put the end to that child's life.
Oh my God.
What the heck is going on in our... Now, this just came down through Canadian Parliament, and it's a fact that they've legalized euthanasia of a child that is handicapped or mentally handicapped. You can legally put that child to death now in Canada. I ask people, what is it going to take for people to wake up to what is going on in our society? And where are the men with testicles that are going to stand up and put an end to this?
Yeah, that's that's terrible. That's beyond terrible.
Well, that's what's going on in Canada, guys. Our government is completely rogue. They just brought in a new legislation where they are going to reintegrate ISIS fighters in Canada. There are 60 of them walking on the streets right now, apparently, that the government just disclosed to Canada. Yeah, 60 ISIS fighters walking the streets in Canada right now that aren't in jail. These in Britain and France, guys, I'm just going to talk about this for a second because it disturbs me so much, but it all plays into the big picture of what's going on right now on our planet. But if you're a British or a French citizen and you go to Saudi Arabia or to one of these Mideast countries and you join ISIS and you become a radicalized fighter for ISIS, you have a kill order put on you by the government. Our government is welcoming ISIS fighters back into Canada, giving them a pension, and putting them into what they call a reintegration program. You cannot reintegrate these people in any shape or form. It just shows you the extremes to what our government's doing. Canadians are absolutely livid right now, what we see going on in Ottawa.
Well,
but like I said, it's all part of the big picture.
Understandably, yeah. So.
Well, do you believe this stuff? People can actually believe what is going on. I can't.
Well, folks, but it is. Doggone it, we're down to the wire there. I wish that if Two Dog could type out a quick message down there, we could read it out for him. I don't know if his internet will hold out long enough. But this is the time when we go around the table and get everybody's last thoughts on things. We've had a pretty profound conversation today. I mean, we always do, it seems like. Words of wisdom just kind of flow from the heart from this place. The message I'd like to share with people is you need to share these messages. If there's something in these words of wisdom that we've shared with you, or the information that Stephen, he posted a message in the chat room. He said, don't worry about the past, you can't change it. Don't worry about the future, you can't predict it. The only real thing is now that why it's called the present a gift. Enjoy it, live it, love it, and you will create a new past, a new future, a new you. See, words of wisdom just keep on rolling. That's it. And that's what this is all about. It's all about to reach out there to those folks listening in and then touch their spirit and let them know how important they are. You really are more important than you think you are. You know, like I said, and I'll say it again, our Creator didn't create no trash, only treasure, and that makes you treasure. And to each one of us, you're just as important as all of us. And we need people to understand that if you come together, that suit of armor gets stronger. For every time somebody joins together, that light gets brighter and brighter. You know, my candle by itself may hold back the darkness, but I'll tell you what, just on this panel alone and the people that show up in these chat rooms, our candles are shining so bright, I hope that people all over the world can see that light. That's what I want. I want people to know that there is hope, that even though things look so bleak, I don't think it's over until it's over. And until it's over, my heart tells me we got to keep going. My heart tells me I got to keep shining that light in hopes that I'm going to inspire somebody to at least believe in themselves enough to maybe not jump off that bridge and maybe not take their life. And if they need to put on that armor of God, I'm willing to be one of those little panels that goes on that shield there that will at least cover you to that extent, and we would all gather around you to keep you from harm and try to help you. That's what we do. That's what we believe in. So with that said, who wants to go first over there? On y'all.
Well, I'll take it up. I just want to, you know, I was just thinking, you know, Two Dog, what he wrote in the chat that somebody's going to read out for him. You know, if you can't find a miracle in your life, if you can't see the miracles that surround you, then simply just get up, go to a mirror, and look in there. Because you are a miracle. No matter who you are, no matter what you're going through, know that the fact that you're here, the fact that your being exists, and that you are still able to take breath and experience life, that's a miracle. That is a miracle above all miracles that we are here. What a great gift that we have. And we can fall into oh woe is me. We all are broken. All of us are broken. We have been through it in all of our lives. But here we are. We are the miracles, each and every one of us. No matter what you're going through right now, there's someone out there who cares. Someone out there, if they don't have the wherewithal to help you financially or whatever, they have the heart and the love to share. And I think that's where we have to come from. We can't be what we're not, but we do have the ability to love. We do have the ability to reach out to each other and say, I'm here. I can listen. I can talk with you. You don't have to be alone. You don't have to feel like there is no one there for you. And, you know, if we just look at life and see the beauty, regardless of what we're going through, the beauty is there. The miracle is there. And I'm not slighting or making light of anyone's suffering at all. That's not what I'm doing. What I'm saying is that we are all suffering. We are all suffering in one way or another. And if we can reach into that part of us that remembers the miracle of our own creation, of the gift that was given to us, and just reach out to others and try to open that door, you know, we can't change everything. We can only change ourselves. Yep. And in changing ourselves, we will change everything. But we have to reach out. We have to put our hand out. We have to put our hearts out there. And I know we're all broken. Yes. It's a scary thing to open yourself up and put yourself out there, because we live in such a time now to where darkness seems to reign. But the only reason it does is because we're not chasing the darkness away with our light, maybe.
That's right.
And if we can all come to that point and decide that we're going to be light, you know, maybe, just saying.
Yeah, that's
it. Beautiful. I'd like to finish up here today, and I want to thank you always again. Just wonderful always being with you guys, and I'm happy to be here. And I guess what I want to say is, I guess why we're talking like this, why we come here every Sunday, is because we really care. And I know that you guys care. That's why I'm here. And we do care, and we do love people. We do love humanity and the Mother Earth and life. And that's why we talk like this, you know. And I just feel like, you know, listening to you, sisters, like, yeah, to me it's sort of like there is darkness, but there's always light. Without, you know, they come together, dark, light, positive, negative. And that also, at any moment, everything can change, and it does. So I guess I'd say, you know, don't be hopeless. and don't give up, because around the corner or the next day or next moment, something is going to shift. That is inevitable. That's the way life is. So, yeah, it might take maybe a little longer sometimes, but if you look back in the past of your life, you will see that there is always something that does shift. And there is like our life, I think, is like a pendulum swinging slowly into the dark and back out into the gray areas and back out into that brilliant, bright light. And yes, then we're going to go all the way back again on the other side. That's like that pendulum of life, you know. And I do believe that we create our own reality, and we have to maybe ask why. Why am I thinking these ways, or why am I believing in the insanity, or why am I in fear, you know? And turn into your heart, go into your heart, and find that light in there, because it is there. And yes, the piece about reaching out, you know, if you feel helpless and hopeless. And I know this is not easy, because yes, I've been in that spot, and you are stuck. You're like just frozen. Work toward reaching out and just maybe go out on the land, because I always receive a healing when I go out to the Mother Earth, you know. Push yourself out of that house, out of off that couch, and wherever you are, go out onto the Mother. The Mother's love and her nurturing is ever present. It's always there. Look around, you know. Just breathe and look around and embrace what is there, and something will start to shift in you. I can guarantee that. So I'm going to stand by my guarantee. So.
Yeah, I can testify to that one. I've been there.
Yes, I know you have. Every one of us here talking today, I know, have been there. So I guess that must mean something. There must be some truth to that. And I know we're not the only ones that speak about that. Okay, so that's what I wanted to say today, and I appreciate to be here today, and many blessings, and Pelamaya Doksha.
All right, well, I'm going to read Charles' deal on there. I don't know if it's the internet deal. You think you got your internet connection going there, Charles, or you want me to just read this comment for you? No, I'll just go ahead.
Yeah, can you hear me? All right.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, you know, I agree with Three Crow Berry, but all Holy Spirit's here, man. So, you know,
man, this just isn't right. He's always got something really brilliant to say, and it just this internet thing's. We got to figure out a way to get Two Dog on a really good system. Anyway, type it out real quick there, Two Dog, and
we're here. Reach out to each other. Be more us. About that. Yeah, go ahead and just read what I.
Okay.
Go ahead and just read.
All right. Sorry about your internet connection there, brother. I just wish we could get that resolved for you, because I really want to hear what you have to say. Always words of wisdom. Charles said in the chat there, he said, as far as miracle, children are a miracle. I went from a 8-year-old eating, sleeping in garbage dens to where I am now with a home, a great wife, and a sweet child. Miracles happen. Just saying, help the children. And you know what? I tell you what, we can feel his heart. I'm telling you, we know where his heart stands. You know, he's out there. He's reaching out to the world. He's trying to get the message out to everybody to bring the world together. And as long as we all keep shining those lights, I mean, the darkness can't never win. And if you're in a dark place right now, you know, that's the best time to shine your light. And if your light's not feeling up to par, you know, come stand next to one of us. Use our light. You know, there's an old song called Lean On Me. It's a lot to that song. I don't have time to play it, but if I did, I would. But there's a lot to it, you know. And so with that said, Barry, you got any last words of wisdom for everybody?
Well, you know, Shazam, we are watching an incredible oligarchy of events unfold on our planet. We see our planet and our world falling into a state of chaos. We see uprootings and wars. We see disasters and pestilence like we've never seen before in human history. And all I can say to people, to me, when I feel that darkness creeping into my life, I simply get on my knees and I say a little prayer. And instantly the darkness is taken away. And there's been many times that I've sat here and I've gone, well, you know, is anybody listening to us? Are we really impacting anybody? Is this, any of this really making any sense to people? And I say, yeah, we are really impacting people, their thoughts, and the way they see things. To me, man, it's all about my connection right now with the man I call Jesus, Yeshua, whoever you want to call him, my creator, is my strength. And I see what's coming, and I see the chaos coming, and all I can say to people is when this chaos unfolds and really becomes crazy in this world, please seek a connection with a much, much more powerful force than anybody sitting at this panel. And it will, and he will, bring peace into your life. He's doing that for me, and I can't do anything, folks, about what's coming. I really can't do anything about what is going to unfold on this planet. Honestly, believe that. All I can do now is try and share my love that I feel for people and my desire to show you what's going on in my life and how I see things and how I feel about things and the difference it's making in me. To me, that's the most important thing that we can do in our lives right now, period.
Yep. I couldn't agree with you more. I'm right there with you, brother. Patty typed in the first part of the lyrics on that. It says, lean on me when you're not strong, and I'll be your friend. I will help you carry on. That's what that song pretty much says. And look, there's an old footprints thing that talks about, you know, the person that was going through the hard times was only seeing one set of footprints in the sand, and it basically comes down to, you know, where Jesus was saying those were the times that I was carrying you. Folks, I don't know what more to say than that has already been said. You know, there is terrible things going on in this world, and I feel like we're going to go down a really rough path. And these are the times right now that all the people of the world need to become a lighthouse, you know, to show that there's a path, you know.
What knight lives in that castle over there? I'm 37. What? I'm 37. I'm not old. Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur.
That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor,
Just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up, will you? Shut up!
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help, I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't
Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot!
We're knights of the round table, we dance whenever we're able. We do routines, we call the scenes, we put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table, our shows are more mid-able. So many times we give and rhyme to our quiet something able. We're off the bat in Camelot, we sing from the die of Camelot. Oh, we're tough and able, quite indefatigable.
I have to push the Pramalot.
No, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
Shazam the Turtle! Always looking, Shazam the Turtle, and the Knights of the Round Table!